Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
and we got a little got a little bit of feedback here. Hold on. Anyway, so we're over here in King Boxing doing a live broadcast. So this is how it's going to work, folks, because this is our first time doing this. We got a lot of live guests that are going to be here, and there's going to be some sparring here live here at Extreme Boxing in Santa Paula, California. And things are running hectic. You know, just to let everybody know, we got Josh McDaniel here, and then we got Gabriel Montoya. Gabriel's going to be right here, right now. He's in the bathroom changing, and we have Josh McDaniel. So I'll show you who Josh McDaniel is really, really quick, and we'll go from there. So Gabriel will throw the link. He'll throw the link up of where you guys can watch us. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get the audio going on the Ustream, but you can still tune in and listen to us on the Blog Talk. So there goes Gabriel right there. And we're going to patch in Gabriel, man. And we had a great weekend over this past Saturday with Robert the Ghost Guerrero. I had a chance to go out there and go watch Robert. Like I said, I'm being distracted because we still have a couple of things that are going all at once. We're trying to get organized over here, and this is our first time doing it. So hopefully, Gabe, can you say something so we can know that you're here?
First time's always the hardest.
It is. It is always the hardest, you know.
Can you hear me at all?
I can't hear you. I don't
see. How about now?
Oh, yeah, now I can.
What's nice is I've got a very strange delay about a second, which is going to freak me out for the next 3 hours. Can you hear that?
I can hear that.
That's a little weird.
It is.
I have no idea where we're going to go forward. We'll see this. We're going to see. Hopefully, people just will give us a just kind of let us know how we're driving throughout the show. This is kind of a new venture for us, doing the kind of live stream and kind of broadcast so you guys can actually see us. We got a lot of people pantomiming around me. But let's get down to some boxing talk, Dave. I want to hear your opening monologue rant. Do you have one?
Well, you know, first off, when I went out to go see Robert the Ghost Guerrero, which, you know, we always talk about bagging on them, and I even said it last week. I said they did a great job. They just, when we talk about promoting-wise, they didn't do it. They just didn't live up to that hype of where they got a good fighter, they got a great following, but unfortunately, they didn't get the great audience that we were all expecting. You know, San Jose used to be a real big fight town, and even though there was a good large amount of people that did show up, but really it was just the norm of the boxing community that ended up at the venue. This is a big city, first off. You know, San Jose holds a lot of people. There's a lot of different nationalities there. So there is a way of promoting it and getting people out to the fight. The event itself, though, did live up to the hype, so I applaud Golden Boy to holding a good fight. All of the, even the undercards were entertaining. Groves did a fantastic job. I mean, he ended the show with that nice, beautiful left hook. Sierra was giving it his all. They made sure they really left the bar. You know, Hugo Sentimento, man, he did a fantastic job, you know, with Bruce, and he was boxing and moving. You know, I mean, there's probably some criticism that we can throw out there about him, but as soon as we get him here in the radio here live with us, we'll be able to talk to him a little bit about how he felt about his performance. But let's go off with Robert the Ghost Guerrero. I don't know what you thought about him, okay? And I thought it was another typical Robert the Ghost Guerrero performance. It was a good performance. It was a solid performance at 147. You know, 18 was a good test for him. But were we that sold and impressed to say he's ready for Floyd Mayweather. I don't know, man. I wasn't.
No, I wasn't. I didn't walk away going, you know, that guy could beat Mayweather. You know, some guy said, well, he really faded late badly. And to me, you know, I don't think Robert always fades late, but he runs out of gas a little bit, and he's got to kind of move and kind of stick and move and kind of give a little more of the illusion of boxing than normal in the later rounds. That's just kind of historically who he is. You know, Escobedo got to him late. Katsidas got to him late. Katsumayor got to him. And then we saw in this that Selkirk Aiden started to get to him late. So I think it's going to be, oh, geez. So we've got, like, multiple streams going here. This is kind of insane. But I thought he looked good. You know, for such a big step up, to move up into a title fight and to be going right to a guy like Selkirk Aiden, who's not, in my opinion, a great world beater, but he's a dangerous guy. He's got a solid right hand. I thought he looked a little rusty. He'd been off, I think, for about a year. And coming back, he looked like it took time for him to kind of warm into the fight. But once he did, he found his rhythm late, and he started to get to Robert. Robert looks solid, like he always does. He's a good boxer. He's a good mover. He can bang a little bit. I think this is the thing that has always confused me about why he moved to 147 is he bypassed 140. He gave up, you know, when you're boiling down in weight, you're doing 130, 135, or 126, and you're a big guy like that, you're doing that so that you gain advantages of physical strength, of power. And by moving straight to 147, he just kind of said, screw it, I don't need the power, I don't need the strength advantage, I just need to move to 147, I want to go for that Floyd fight. I think he's done himself a little bit of a disservice by doing that, because you know, now he's just a volume puncher that's going to need to worry about his cardio and be able to come back late in fights, or the book is kind of written that you kind of bide your time, you put in some body work, and then you go for him late. I think that's what Floyd would do.
I got to agree with you. You know, the thing that had me mostly concerned with Robert the Ghost Guerrero is that the layoff, definitely, you saw it. It was a big toll there, you know. And Gabriel's going to throw out the link to the Ustream because there are people on Twitter right now asking for the Ustream and stuff. You're going to have to bear with us because we're just kind of scrambling around. As you could tell, even the beginning of this show, I didn't do my normal intro of how we do things normally because we got a lot of commotion here. But going back with Robert the Ghost Guerrero, I did see him get pushed back. I did see him get, you know, I don't know if it was he got dazed or something happened, you know. So I just really felt that if he is going to dare to be brave and continue calling out Floyd Mayweather, I'll tell you something funny. When I'm arriving there to the HB Pavilion and I'm showing up there, I saw the Watson twins, who are they're not twins, you know, they're 3 years apart, but they look like twins, right? And I saw them there, Sam Watson's kids, and I you know started talking to them immediately, asking how they were doing, et cetera, et cetera. They were like, oh, great. And then I asked, I said, what are you guys doing out here, standing in front of the stadium? And they said the arena, I mean, and they said we're waiting for Andre Berto. And I kind of found that a little weird in the beginning. And then I said scouting. Looking, potentially, and it just spoke out. So that kind of left me thinking that if that's the road that Robert the Ghost is going for, I think that's a good way of finding out. Could he prepare himself against a strong, fast, 147-pound fighter like, you know, Berto?
You know, Steve Kim mentioned that fight, too, as one that he was looking forward to. And, you know, I'm not completely 100% sold. I think Berto is a little bit too much of a physical specimen, although I think Robert's a better technician. A fight that I think is kind of interesting is Sean Porter versus Robert Guerrero. They're both kind of tweeners. They're not true welterweights. You know, and they're both – I mean, Robert knows who he is. I think Sean's still kind of figuring out who he is. Or is discovering his limitations. I think that's a fun fight. I think both guys would come forward. They would attack. They would box in spots. I think that would come down to the wire. That would be an interesting fight. I know for Robert and them, they kind of want the big fight or nothing. I mean, we're already starting to get the press releases from Mr. Serrano regarding, you know, what people think about Robert and his chances against Floyd. You know, more power to him. I can't denigrate a guy for wanting to fight the best. That's what this sport's all about, making as much money as possible and fighting the best challenges that you can in the process. Some people, you know, go one route or the other. Robert seems to want to go both routes, and I applaud that. But maybe you'll disagree or agree with this, But don't you think that you have to listen to the fans at some point? And if you keep saying the same thing over and over again, and they keep saying the same thing back to you, don't you have to listen at some point?
I would say eventually you're going to have to listen. I mean, the fans are ultimately the guys that supposedly, that's the way things are supposed to work in a sport. You know, we're the guys that come out to the events. We're the guys that support the fighters. We're the guys that go all out and buy the merchandise. We're the guys that, you know, bring the made up banners and stuff, and, you know, sit at the stands and wave the flags and all that. At some point, you got to listen to them when they're not fully convinced and they're not fully going, you know what, this is a great fight. This is a winnable fight. That's when you need to stop and look back and go, you know, there's some realism here. There's some realism of what the fans are saying. And I hate to say it, a lot of times, you know, fans are right on point when they want to see a fight and they think that it's not a winnable fight. Yes, we have had some upsets in this past year. Josecito Lopez, the, you know, Riverside Rocky. But, you know, that's not going to be all the time. You don't get that all the time. You know, promoters try to make money. Promoters try to have a package to sell to the fans, and they're not going to jeopardize that. So Robert pushing it, which I'm surprised, to tell you the truth, that Golden Boy haven't really jumped on that bandwagon. They've been kind of listening to the fans just a tiny bit, you know?
That's kind of rare. Well, I mean, you know, Golden Boy is kind of a, for better or for worse, a fan-friendly organization. They put on fights that sometimes aren't even in the, you know, to their best interest. You know, case in point, Kirkland and Angulo, great fight for the fans, but you were kind of left with two damaged commodities after that, in my opinion. One guy comes out with an injured shoulder, although he hurt that in the Molina fight, but started to wear and tear a little bit, Kirkland. And then Angulo, well, he's got his visa issues, but he also just kind of got abandoned out there. I'm starting to get word on him. I'll find out later in the show if I can actually bring up what's going on with Angulo, because he, from what I understand, has had his day in court. Now he's just waiting to get cleared. But
can we get some free Angulo shirts or something? Man? I mean, you know, should we start that?
Well, I mean, if people are going to wear free Floyd shirts, then I guess maybe they should wear a free Angulo shirt. I mean, that guy actually didn't do anything to be incarcerated, whereas Floyd deserved every second of every minute, of every day, of every hour, of every month that he got. In fact, I think he should get another year. But I don't like people that beat women.
Just to warn you, really quick, we do have a Floyd Mayweather fan here that's going to, you know, he does have his pom-poms here, which is Josh McDaniel. And he may jump across the table and attack you for saying something like that, because his clock is set for Friday.
Wow.
For Floyd Mayweather. Midnight tonight, you know.
Just kidding, how's midnight tonight? Wow, it's like a Nike giveaway, isn't it? Everybody's going to be lined up around the corner hoping to get a free picture with Floyd. Yeah, I don't. Well, we'll just leave that there. That's my stance on anti-violence with you know, against women. But getting back to, you know, the fights and where Golden Boy is going with Robert Guerrero, I mean, it was hard to – and I guess we could transition into the TMT stuff. It's hard to see. I mean, some people are saying that Floyd, you know, and 50 Cent's new organization is being run behind the scenes by Al Haymon. Other people are telling me that Al Haymon's out and that there's new management kind of moving in. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with Golden Boy. And some of those fighters that feel like Robert, that they feel like they haven't been quite promoted to their full extent. Will they turn around and start really promoting the hell out of those guys if Al Haymon indeed rips all, you know, Broner and Gary Russell, Danny Garcia, the guys that seem to be with Golden Boy where they're actually with Haymon, and takes them over to TMT? If that does happen, Golden Boy is going to be a little bit of a ghost ship, and they're going to have to actually promote just like the rest of everybody else, you know. And we may not see the end of those comps that they're giving away.
You know, I got to tell you, with 50 Cent deciding, if he decides to make this move, you know, and me and Josh McDaniel were talking about this, and I'll patch him in right now because he is here with us. But the only thing is that he's a bit of a hog. He's on Boxing Fix Radio, and once you get Josh McDaniel going, he gets going.
Well, first of all, I feel like I'm next in line to fight Floyd Mayweather when he gets out, just like Guerrero is. I think that would be a great matchup at a catchweight or something like that, but who knows. But it feels great to be here in this boxing gym, though, a little different.
You know, I like the fact that 50 Cent is thinking about, you know, moving in on the box. I'm going to tell you why. For one, you're talking about a guy who, first off, take away the whole fact that he's a rapper, okay? He's a good business person. He knew exactly what he was going with in his hip-hop career. He knew he had to attack the bigger in the sea, and that's what he did. It was called beef. And then when he got his recognition, he just didn't stay stale on that. He didn't decide to stay on that little pedestal. What he decided to do was to move on to other corporate things, which was movies, books, a clothing line, and even the vitamin water. That's a smart guy. That's an intelligent kid. That guy understands the market. He understands there's a whole flow of it. Go after it. Can he do that with boxing? Well, I think he could do an extreme. He can definitely do something that boxing's been trying for a long time, which is crossover our sport back to what it was at one time in the 80s and 70s and even in the 60s. Can 50 Cent do that? I think he could do it to an extent. Here's the biggest problem, though. Is it really in the interest of boxing, or is it in the interest of 50 Cent and Floyd Mayweather? That's what we don't know, and that's why I'm really curious. Now, Golden Boy, hey, I'd be a little scared, too. And not only Golden Boy should be scared, I think Dana White from the UFC should be a little frightened too, because he's been trying to get that crossover for a minute.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, some people are – what I thought was really crazy was Kevin Iovi did his 25 most powerful people in boxing. He already put 50 Cent at number three, which I think is – you know, I don't even think the line to kiss his ass has started yet. So I don't think you should put him at number three just yet. But it's interesting that everybody already is saying, oh, what a great thing for boxing. Look what he's doing. He's fixing boxing. They haven't even done one show yet, and people are already applauding them, which, you know, it is what it is. But to me, I think it's a good thing. Right now, until further notice, I think it's a good thing. He's going to bring in the crossover stars. He's going to have people. You know, it was nice to see Jack Nicholson at the fights. I was watching Ortiz versus Lopez the other night, and it was nice to see Jack there. It was kind of like the old days, but you know what? It's like the real old days at this point. What we really need is the younger actors, the young hip-hop stars, young music stars in general, younger athletes from other sports to come in and watch us and to be excited about what we do. I think Golden Boy on some level is on the right track and then put on exciting fights. Sometimes like this weekend's Top Rank card that we'll talk about later is more about developing their stars, and they're all in kind of gimme fights. We get to see them. They get to fulfill their contract. The guys get some work. But they're fights that aren't really taking them anywhere other than those places that I just mentioned. Golden Boy risks a lot. They risk often. And that can be a good thing, because if you start to look at the model of the UFC, where losses don't matter as much, as long as the fights are exciting, people will want to see again and again and again. Maybe it isn't a long-haul kind of approach for the fighters' careers, but in terms of the sport and promotion, it's a very good thing. So I'm excited for TMT. You know, hopefully I'm not banned right off the bat. Maybe I should back off on the anti-violence against women thing. I start shaking people. I don't know.
That's true. And when I was at the event, and definitely a lot of folks, you know, see me. And I got to say this really quick. You know, so I'm a hometown boy from San Jose, California. It was great to see a lot of San Jose faces to show up and support the sport of boxing. It was great to see a lot of San Jose, let me put it, a barrier media people that I've known for quite some time show up, and they gave me a warm greeting, that because I haven't been out to any events in some time and stuff. I've been letting a lot of the writers go, a lot of photographers go, because I kind of feel that they're doing a lot of the work for leaving the ring. You know, before we move on, we are waiting for our guest to come on. I believe we do have him here. Dave Chen, if you can check with make sure if we have Joel Diaz with us here live right now on the radio.
And while we're doing that, let me jump in. And this event here at the Extreme Boxing School in Santa Paula is being sponsored by the Extreme Boxing School in Santa Paula, as well as El Pescador Mexican restaurant in Fillmore, California, and the Glen Tavern Inn in Santa Paula, California, which is 101 years old. It's a historical landmark that Dave, myself, and the rest of the crew are staying at this evening. We're doing kind of an overnight trip because Dave lives up north, and I live so far away in Koreatown that it would just be too much for me to drive back. So I'd like to thank all those groups for helping sponsor Leaving in the Ring, the live Ustream version. Hopefully we'll get to do more of these in L.A. proper and in other places as well.
Man, sounds great, man. I'm happy to be over here. So let's get Joel Diaz Jr. on live with us here on the radio. Joel, you there, brother?
Yeah, how's it going, man? How's it going?
Doing good, man. How you doing? Long time no speak
just,
to.
Yeah, doing pretty good, man. Just got done working out now. Just chilling. How you guys doing?
Right on. Oh, so you got a fight coming up, right?
Correct. August 18th, man.
August, you know what? We were trying to get Gabriel. He says he can't hear you.
And it's upsetting me.
You can hear me.
It's probably my signal, man.
No, he says that he's on here for some reason, but he cannot.
I cannot hear
hello.
You.
Hello, hello.
Okay.
So you guys go ahead.
So I'll tell you what. Gabriel's going to ask. He's going to ask the question, and I'm going to, you know, just repeat it, and then I'll give you the answer it says. How about that? We're quiet that one. You know, we've done things like that again. You're on Leaping in the Ring.
I can barely hear you guys. As well. Hello.
So, how has everything been going? You've been consistent. You've been doing a lot of hard work with Boxing 360. And like I said, small break for a while because of injuries, and you had to recoup. How are things now? Are you 100% or is there some kinks that are iron out?
Man, I could barely hear you guys, honestly.
Okay, how about now? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you perfect now.
Okay, perfect. You had to turn down his mic and stuff. Okay, here's my. So how is everything going with you? Because, you know, you had some injuries, so you were out for a while. You're back. I know Boxing 360 has been doing a lot of great work with you. They kept you consistent. You had that, fight of the year with Guy. But how's everything doing now with you? How's your body feeling? And is there anything that of concern that you guys are worried about? Have you corrected any of the old stuff that you were doing? You know, some of the mistakes. Give me a little info of what you've been up.
Actually, as of injuries, didn't have no injuries actually after the last fight, just a couple bruises, you know. But I mean, it's boxing, that's gonna happen. But we recovered good after that fight. Didn't really take too long off, just a week. And after that fight at the boat, we actually got offered a fight the next month. So we took a week off and we just went back to it, you know. We just back to it, hard work, hard training and everything. And since that fight didn't go on, we just been up here, man. We just been up here just waiting for a date, and August 18th is the date.
Do you, what's up, Joel? This is Gabriel Montoya. How you doing, man?
Good.
At this point, I mean, you already set an opponent. You have Guillermo Sanchez, right? Is that guy actually locked in? Because sometimes you've had some guys, and then you've had to switch out opponents at the last second. Talk to me a little bit about what challenge does he represent to you? Have you studied the tape? Do you know much about him?
He's a southpaw, man. He's a southpaw. He actually has more fights than me. A couple losses on his belt, but I guess you could say as much as fights as he does, he has something under his sleeve, you know. But as a southpaw, you know, we've been training in training camp for a southpaw like him. So I mean, we don't got no worries. Actually, we've been working really good. We've been working our asses off, and we're ready for whatever he brings to the table.
Have you faced a southpaw professionally?
No, this would be my first southpaw. This is, I guess you could say this is another test for me as a professional, you know. See what I got against a southpaw. I'm gonna show Boston 360 what I got against a southpaw.
One of the big tests that you were given recently was Emmanuel Lucero, which I thought at the time that Mario told me about it. That's Mario Igobi, who runs Boxing 360. That was a big test. That was a guy with 37 fights at the time. He was going to come in and challenge you, really on a level that you hadn't been challenged before, and yet you knocked him out in 5 rounds. Talk about that fight.
He was a bull, man. He went in the ring. A veteran, you know, an OG, I like to say, you know, a Well, Tom Gangston is he's an old school fighter. He knows what he's doing up there, you know. And against a young prospect, me, nine fights after that was 10. He knew what he was doing up there. That's why we have to take him out. You know, we have to go punch by punch, man. We weren't looking for that one punch, but we were looking for that one punch because, I mean, he's a veteran, and anything could have happened, you know.
Yeah. In that type of a pace, a lot of times you see fighters end up burning themselves out. So you think that there's got to be some breaks in your career in order to make sure that you're okay?
Breaks? Yeah, actually, after a fight, man. It depends. It actually depends after how you're getting out of the ring. You know, if you're not too badly messed up, or if you're hardly messed up, but your body does need a break. Like everybody says, you're not a machine. You know, you're a human being. We're all human beings, and we don't run under oil. You know, so as a human being, everybody needs a break. But I mean. I can't really take a break, man. I get too bored of myself. So it's just back to the gym we go.
Absolutely. No, I understand what you're saying and stuff, you know, but I guess back in the old days, you know, they kept themselves consistent, and you see a lot of pauses and breaks. I like the fact that you're not doing that. I like the fact that you keep going into the gym, and you keep going in the ring, and you keep testing yourself. Because some of the opponents that you've been facing, put a lot of wear and tear in your body. But I guess if you're being consistent, that wear and tear really is just it's an everyday workout that you normally would do when you go to the gym, because you definitely put yourself under that pressure, right?
Yeah,
you might as well do it and get your record patented up and make sure that you're sharp. So when you do go up against the big boys and you're ready to make a big splash in the big hype spots, you're going to be ready. And that's one thing I see as a prospect, show up for fight night with a big test and ends up not moving forward, fall apart because they weren't consistent.
Yeah, because they weren't ready, man. Like I tell my manager, and I tell Boxing 360 and Abel Sanchez, my trainer, I stay ready, man. I stay ready for whatever happens, whatever they got bringing to the ring. You know, it's our business, and our business has to stay ready for whatever comes. You know.
Absolutely, I'm gonna pass it over to my co-host Gabriel real quick.
Hello?
No, you gotta go. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can barely hear you, bro.
Dude, yeah, it's... Can you hear me now?
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, he can hear me. Okay.
Yeah.
Talk to me about the plan for this year. You've already fought four times. This is your fifth time. How many more times do you expect to fight this year?
As much as Boxing 360 wants me to fight. You know, as long as they keep giving me fights, they're keeping me on my feet. You know, they're keeping me busy. So they're doing their part, man. Like I said, it's a business. They do their part, and I got to do mine. So whatever they bring to the table, man, I'll be ready. If they want to fight three more times this year, they're willing to fight three more times. You know, I'm not somebody that takes no for an answer, man. I'm always gonna say yeah.
who you been sparring with? So you're still up in Big Bear, right?
Correct. I'm up here in Big Bear now. This training camp, I was sparring with Benavidez. I was sparring with Benavidez until I got told that I was going to fight a southpaw, which is Guillermo Sanchez. I've been working with Benavidez he's actually fighting this weekend, and I give him props, you know. I give him props for doing what he's doing, man. We throw it down in that ring, and I guess a lot of people want to see that sparring, but I mean, it's just all eyes only, you know, for right now.
What do you how do you assess him as a fighter? I've watched him a lot, but I'm curious what a fighter thinks of him.
Of Benavides?
Yeah.
He's good, man. He's a fighter. He's a fighter that likes to actually, that's what caught my eye. He's a fighter that likes to fight off the ropes, and he's pretty good at it. But I kind of got his movement, you know. I picked it up quick enough. But that's him, man. He's a good fighter, and he's another good prospect, man. He's another good one that's gonna make it to the top, just like us, man. We're hungry for
it. I'm excited for your year, man. You know, I wish you well in the fight, and looking forward to the point where they start showing your fights again. We got that one, you know, look at you with Guy Robb, and then we haven't had a chance to really see you in action since. So hopefully we'll get you back on TV and in some meaningful fights soon, man.
Yeah, man. Hopefully, because I mean, I'm ready to show the world what I got. You know, once again, that Guy Robb fight, it was a good fight, but you know, there was a few mistakes that you guys can see. But I'm with another trainer. I'm in another trainer cap, and you know, we've been working on what we need to work on, and I just want to show the world what I got and surprise everybody. You know. Surprise.
You're still with Abel, right?
Correct. I'm still with Abel Sanchez.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a nice match, and it seems like you guys have had a lot of success. I've heard nothing but good things. So I'm wishing you all the best, man.
He's great, man. I understand him. He understands me. He knows where I'm coming from, and there's one thing in our belt, man. We just want to be champions, and that's our route, man. That's where we're gonna go.
Absolutely. Well, man. Hey, thanks for coming with us and speaking with us here on Leaving the Ring. Hey, we'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right, man. Thank you. Appreciate it for having me.
All right, brother. You take care. Well, it looks like we kind of figured out a little bit of the whole Blog Talk and the Ustream at the same time. We're still scrambling around trying to figure out everything else. I think let's see if we got Josh on with us. Josh, you there with us, brother?
Yeah, I'm here. I hear everyone loud and clear. Everyone hears me on the other end, right? All right, just making sure. You know, everything's crazy around here, but it's okay. It's fun, you know. It's a little hectic, you know.
Right. Hex, absolutely. You know, well, Hugo's here. He's doing a meet and greet.
I know.
But you look good in it, man. You look good and stuff. Let's patch in some fans over here on Leaving the Ring, and let's talk some boxing, because that's what everybody does when they call in. If you want to call in the show, 347-215-7598. We are doing Ustream today, and we're doing the Blog Talk like usual. You can always log on to the show at leavingtheringradio.com. We got Hugo Sarmiento here, who had a sensational victory. He's going to be coming on with us in about maybe 10 more minutes, but we're going to patch in some fight fans that want to talk boxing here on Leaving the Ring. Now I can feel the pace. You know, we're slowing down because it's not hectic, and we figured out a few things here on Leaving the Rings. But let's patch in our man CT. He's always calls into Leaving the Ring. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, how you guys doing?
I'm doing good, brother.
Oh, can you guys hear me pretty well?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear, man.
Okay. Yeah, I just want to talk about that Robert Guerrero and Aiden fight. I thought it was a pretty good fight. But first of all, if I could talk about Robert Guerrero as a fighter, I think he's one of those fighters who truly believes in himself. I think at lightweight, he didn't get the, you know, type of recognition, the spotlight he felt he deserved. So I think that's why he wants to make this a coach as far as a welterweight, you know what I mean? Even though I agree with you 100%, Dave, I think he's one of those fighters, he needs to get in where he fits in. You know, to me, I think he needs to grow into the weight class before he wants to, you know, get into those big spotlight type events. I think he needs a couple of, you know, more proven fights to see where he's at as a welterweight, kind of like the fight that he was in. I give him a lot of credit. I think it was a very tough fight. He didn't, you know, he didn't fight the best fighter in the division, but he fought a very tough, come-forward, aggressive fighter who usually gives him trouble, who gave him trouble that night. I think Robert handled it pretty well. His boxing skills were pretty well. But I think he did gas out later on, as, you know, I've seen him do previous fights. Maybe he needs to work on some things, even though I just think that's how he is. But definitely, it's not too many fighters jump up from lightweight to welterweight and are truly successful. Only, you know, a couple have done it, like Pacquiao and Duran and stuff like that. But, you know, dealing with Guerrero's height and his size and his boxing ability, he might do, you know, pretty well. But a couple more fights until he's, you know, up there with the Mayweathers and so on.
I agree with you. You know, I mean, overall, I thought the Guerrero performance was a Guerrero performance, you know. A great boxer, a guy that he can control the fight. But, you know, when it comes to those later rounds, there is that possibility. He can he slows down. He becomes vulnerable. I've seen bigger guys, and bigger guys that are quicker, that be a problem for him. I wouldn't want to see him run. And Ike's team, I don't know. I'm not sure, because, you know, he's got some new people in his on his side now, and he's got some good. I'm not taking nothing away from Bob Santos or anything like that, but having Luis de Cubas Jr. on that corner, I kind of like that. I think that Luis makes really good decisions. He's got a good eye for talent, and he knows how to maneuver his fighters and stuff. So I'm curious of seeing what's next for Robert. Like I said, seeing Bertel there, to me, that could be an overall good test, just because of the injury, the layoff, and at the same time, Bertel is a little anxious, and Bertel does leave himself open to be touched and taken advantage of. But he's a big, strong 147, and he's got a lot of speed and power. CT, I'm going to put you back on hold, because we're going to patch in our next guest, and then we're going to have Hugo here live with us on Leaving the Ring. Okay, brother? Thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Let's patch in Luis. Speaking of the devil, I see he's on hold with here. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. How's everything going?
Hey, how's it going, brother? How's everything?
Good, man. Good. You know, had a successful Saturday night. You know, I loved the whole event. Undercards went well. The main event did really good. But am I right about this? You are part of the Guerrero Ghost in Gilroy camp now, right?
Yeah, I co-managed with Bob Santos, who you know, has done a terrific job, has had him his whole career, has got him to where he's at now, a five-time world champion, and Bob brought me in a few months ago, and we've been working together. This was our first fight together, and, you know, I think it was a great performance and a historic performance. As you guys know, Robert is the only fighter now, you know, with Manny Pacquiao and Henry Armstrong to ever win a featherweight and a welterweight world title, and the second Mexican-American ever to, you know, behind Oscar De La Hoya, to have four different titles in four different weight classes. So, I mean, a lot of these critics, you know, so-called critics, they say, you know, he's not at that star or elite level. I think, you know, he's proved it inside and outside the ring.
I want to say, look, I wouldn't argue that. You know, I think that Robert has the potential of being at that star level. But my question is, does his promoters believe in that?
Well, you know what, it doesn't matter, because I think Robert's shown over time, you know, that he's passed the durable test. You know, he's like a Marcus. He's like one of these guys keep trucking forward. And now everyone's starting to see, you know what, no one jumps up two weight classes, period, from 135 to 147, let alone coming off a rotator cuff surgery and a month of layoff. You know, I think, you know, you guys, and I always hear your show, you guys preach a lot of, you know, guys staying active and if not taking tune-ups. Well, you know what? That guy wasn't a tune-up. You know, that Turkish guy was one of the toughest
right.
guys at 147. You know, he's one of the top three hardest punchers in the division. And look, for an example, put the guy in with Amir Khan. Put him in with the Bird, one of those guys. I mean, he hits him with the right hand he was hitting Robert with. You know, they get knocked out. So I think Robert proved he's one of the top 47 pounders in the world. And I'd be willing to debate with anybody, you know, to see why he deserves that Floyd Mayweather shot and why he's got a great shot of winning it. You know, I don't know what your guys' opinion is on it.
For me, it was. This is Gabriel. What's up, Louis? Louis.
Hey, Gabe. How's it going, bro? Hey,
good, man. For me, it was the way he faded late. But you're right. I mean, he's got all the technical skills. I wonder about the strength factor with Floyd, although Floyd's not exactly like a really super physical guy. He's not going to be all over you like a Margarito.
I mean, obviously, you know, Floyd's the best skilled fighter in the world. Do you think he's a better puncher than Adon?
No. I don't think he's the best puncher at all.
If Robert can drop 950 punches on Adon, who's a huge puncher, imagine what he'll do to Floyd. It'd be like a BB gun hitting a brick wall. I mean, he'll drop 1,200 or 1,400 punches. And Floyd, how can Floyd be able to deal with that? That's a big question people don't realize. Yeah, Floyd's a great fighter. He's a great defensive fighter. But when you're always you're comparing 600 total punches to 1,300 punches, it's going to be a fight. Trust me.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, he went really this is my question. We were talking about it before. And obviously the Floyd fight is the fight. You know, that's the fight that everybody wants. He's kind of like Oscar back in the day. I just wonder, I mean, is this like more of a plan B? Because I knew you wanted to fight at 140, and then the injury happened and you guys bypassed it. Didn't you want to get his feet wet a little bit more than this? Or is this just like Dave was saying, this is a guy that just flat out believes in himself. Screw 140, we're going to 147, and we're just going to take our shot.
Yeah, I think his belief in Jesus Christ, you know, our belief in him, his team, and just knowing Robert Guerrero is one of the top fighters in the world, you know, pound for pound, not just at 147. Doing what he did is an incredible feat. I'm telling you right now, not too many fighters do it. You know, I work with tons of fighters,
yeah.
and the basic – coming off a 15-month layoff, you probably want to take an 8-round fight against the right guy,
yeah.
Not the number one contender in the world who's undefeated and is knocking everyone out. I mean, what Robert did is just an incredible feat. Not too many people can do it. And like, I understand what you guys said. He gassed out. I seen him get a second win. And one thing you guys didn't point out is Robert punched with the puncher. You know, obviously the game plan and the camp with Ruben and Bob were obviously side to side. You know, let's work angles. But obviously when you're in the middle of a fight, I can't tell you guys, can't say because we haven't been in the ring, but Robert's a 6-time world champion. He felt, for some reason, you know what, I can't get my rhythm, so I'm going to stay on the inside, I'm going to rough this guy up, and that's exactly what he did. So
it reminded me of something Tim Bradley said when he was training for Pacquiao, and he said, if I don't hit that hard, how come dudes don't just walk right through me? And I was reminded of watching Guerrero, because he did go inside, and he punched with a puncher. That was impressive.
You know one thing, though, that people don't point out? With Pacquiao and these guys and these so-called pound-for-pound guys, are you know what? Everyone's talking about cat's weight, so you got to do this, or you can't wear these gloves. You got to wear grand gloves. If you're the best defensive fighter in the world, then who cares what gloves the fighter wears? You know, same thing with Pacquiao, Margarito, and when he fought Cotto, and no rehydration weights. You know, Robert fought this Turk on all his terms. 147 pounds, let's do it. Want to wear Reyes gloves? Let's do it. You know, you want to rehydrate and wait, go to whatever you want. I'm going to beat you, and I'm going to rough you up, and he proved that. Now, a lot of these guys like Pacquiao, I mean, look, he's a great fighter, but who has he really fought at 147? Without the catch weight and without dropping him down to 144. Shit, I'd love to get Cotto down to 144 to fight Robert.
That's a good point. Those last 3 pounds, I mean, just ask Adrian Broner. Those last 3 pounds do matter, you know.
And the same thing with Floyd. I mean, the gloves. And look, I mean, if it didn't make a difference, then trust me, these guys wouldn't do it. But they're in the ring. They're the ones getting hit. They know the difference between getting hit by a Grant glove, getting hit by a Reyes glove. They know the difference, you know, and it's a huge difference.
Right.
So Robert shows, you know, it doesn't matter what glove it is. It doesn't matter. You know, I'm a better fighter, period, and we're going to show the world that. So, like when a guy like Floyd Mayweather, you know, he's a possibility. But I think Robert opened the doors. He's got a ton of options. I think
I mean, come on. Let's be honest, Lewis. Let's be honest, though. I mean,
who have options?
Your eyes. You have the eyes.
Does Mayweather have options, or does Robert have options?
Does Robert have options?
He's got more options than Floyd. Floyd's got to fight on pay per view. He's got to find a pay per view guy. And if not, he won't fight. Robert can fight on Showtime. He can fight on HBO. He can fight wherever he wants to fight. And you know what? Let's look at the options now on Floyd. Who does he really
have? But I heard the options were very slim for him because nobody wants to fight him. That's why he never campaigned at 140.
Well, you know what? That's the reason he jumped up 2 weight classes. Now people think, you know what? He's vulnerable. He got some big right hands. Maybe I could beat him. And you know what? let's do it. You know, whoever it is, you know, there's plenty of world champions out there, and look, Robert's one of the stars. He's got to face the facts. He's undefeated in world title fights. He's on a 14 fight winning streak, and with the story he's got, I mean, look, you find a better story for 24/7.
Hey, let me ask you this. I got two questions for you. First one is that, Luis, how old are you, brother? Because you look like a very young guy. You know, every time I see you, man, you're
25. I use a good facial cream. Keeps me young. Yeah,
exactly.
25.
Now, my question is, though, are you flirting with to age yourself pretty quick? Because you get fighters, and I got to praise you with this, man, is that the fighters that you go after and the fighters you sign or decide to co-manage, these are talented fighters. You said something about star power. But unfortunately, we both know this, in boxing, skills are not exactly the crossover to star power. It kind of ends up being who you know in this business. Now, with yourself, how hard is it struggling? I mean, let's talk about Laura. He signed with TMT, supposedly. No, signing with Heyman. Is there any truth to that? I mean, what's going on there?
Yeah, he signed with Heyman. I mean, look, in boxing, there's a different situation with different fighters. And one thing you can't let ego get in front of you and know which way or form. And every fighter is different. And signing with Heyman at that time for Lara was the best way to go, because you know what? Lara's at a different point, let's say, for a guy like Guerrero. Guerrero's a star. You know, he and every which way and form you look at it, Lara, to me, is one of the best, most talented fighters in the world, but no one wants to fight him. So I think a guy like Al, who's got maybe a little bit more strength sometimes with over at HBR Showtime, can pay a little bit more money and help me out. And also being affiliated with a guy like Al always helps out. But, I mean, you know, I think my resume, my father, Roberto Duran, Felix Trinidad, Jorge Luis Gonzalez, I mean, Wilfredo Gomez and Sergio Pedrosa, I mean, we're talking about, you know, the real school of boxing, you know. So you know, we really know what's going on. It's just a pleasure to be able to work with some of these guys. You know, without the fighters, there is no boxing, and that's what a lot of people get their egos confused, you know. So you just got to worry about what's best for your fighter and that fighter at that time.
Without question. Hey, you've been around a long time. You're 78 years old. You look like you're 21. I'm curious. What do you think about 50 Cent getting into the boxing promotion mix? Just from you've been around so long, and your father's been around so long. I'm curious for your perspective.
Yeah, I don't know. I think. Look, if it's a good thing for boxing, it's a good thing for the fans. I'm all for it. You know. And I think he could definitely bring a spark to the sport that could be needed. So we'll just look forward to seeing what TMT brings to the table.
Can you talk a little bit about the rest of the fighters that you're working with and what you guys have planned coming up in the future?
Yeah, we got Irms Landy Lara, you know, who we're working on something for him. He should be coming back hopefully in October, whether it's with Vanes Matarosian, whoever it is, you know, he's going to be in a showcase type fight, if not fighting for a world title. Coming up in 2 weeks, you got, you know, Brady's Prescott, who's going to be fighting Gato Figueroa, you know, who's going to be looking to shine on Tito Vitura and get back in the double win column. Back to back. Then after that, you know, we got Robert's little brother, Randy Guerrero, making his pro debut on September 8th at the Ward Dawson card, who's a tremendous little amateur coming out. He obviously comes from the fighting pedigree, and he's another kid we think can be a world champion. And you know, the schedule goes from there on. And now we got Highland Williams and Yudel Johnson coming back in soon up fights. And a kid named Junior Dorothy Coast, who's 13-0 with 13 knockouts, who really is the next Latin heavyweight world champion. So there's a couple guys coming up, you know, and obviously we're using the force and pushing hard. But, you know, we're real happy with the performance Robert Guerrero put on, and we really feel he's the next star of boxing. I don't know why anyone else doesn't feel that way.
I definitely have always felt that he's a star in boxing. Unfortunately, I just don't think that his promoters feel the same way. But I am glad that you're part of his team, because I think that you're a very added part. You're going to do some good stuff for him, and it's well-deserving for Robert the Ghost Guerrero, man. Hey, Luis, thank you, brother, for calling in and speaking to us here on
Leave
the
Ring.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
All right, thank you, guys. You have a great night, all right?
You too, man. Take care.
All right.
Well, there you go. Luis de Cubas Jr. here on Leaving the Ring Radio. Right now in about a minute or so, we're going to have Hugo with us live speak to us here on YouTube. He's over sweating it over there and waiting patiently. And he's wearing the salmon shirt, man, all rocking it hard today. He's outdoing us here. The guys are leaving. We're looking like shag dogs, and this guy's looking like Mr. Pimp Daddy.
Yeah, he's rocking salmon with a vest, you know, with like pockets. It's not fair. I wish I would have told that. I would have worn a suit.
You know, he looks like a model, dude. He's outdoing us. We're old men over here, and you got this young buck and stuff. No wonder why all the ladies are going over there, you know. So let's introduce Hugo, and he's going to be come walking down over here. And he's going to be sitting in between me and Gable and speaking to the both of us and stuff. So we're going to switch headsets really quick. So go ahead and give a shout-out to our sponsors, and we'll...
Yeah, I just want to remind everybody that this very special version of the Ustream episode of Eating the Ring is brought to you by El Pescado, a Mexican restaurant in Fillmore, California, as well as Extreme Boxing in Santa Paula, California, where we're actually broadcasting live from with an institutional audience. And the Glen Tavern Inn in Santa Paula, California. So I'd like to thank those sponsors once again for making this show possible. And here we are with junior middleweight prospect. You're a big boy. You seem like you've grown. Hugo Centeno, otherwise known as The Boss. Welcome to the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. Hey, no problem. Camera, you can stare at yourself while we're actually doing this. Or you can stare at Dave, which is what I'm trying to do. So talk to us about this fight, man. I thought it was one of your more complete performances, that you boxed well throughout, you punched when you needed to, and you kind of kept the movement down. It wasn't extraneous movement. How did you feel about it?
I actually felt pretty good about it. You know, the guy was a tough fighter, and a lot of people went in there thinking,
you know, that he wasn't as experienced as he was.
But,
you know, he's a 12-round fighter, and... you know, he had 22 wins with 14 knockouts, 7 losses. And, you know, they announced his record wrong on the show. But, you know, he was a tough dude. You know, he wouldn't go down. It was just like hitting a brick wall. It was a great experience for me.
Which part was hardest for you? The back end or when you kind of tired a little bit? Or did you feel like you kind of kept your energy throughout? That's what it seemed to me for the first time in a while, that you were really steady. That's what I noticed about it, which some people want to look spectacular, but sometimes steady is a good thing.
Definitely, you know, just like knowing that you can go the full eight, you know, fighting smart, learning how to pace yourself, you know, every fight is a bigger test for me, and you know, that's what they're doing right now is testing me, and I feel like, you know, just knowing that I can go the full eight, it gives me more confidence. It was a great confidence booster.
When you start to go rounds like that, talk about your mental process. What are you thinking? You get into 6, 7, like you're in a new territory. Is your mind racing a little bit? Does it start to slow down? What's the thought process?
You know, it just shows them how to stay cautious, you know, like I was saying, you know, it's a great learning experience, and it just tells them, you know, pace yourself well and just don't blow your wad, pretty much, you know, just fight smart and do what you got to do, don't get careless, stay focused, regardless if you're winning, because anything could happen, you know, this guy's an extreme power puncher, he's a tough dude, so just kept my focus.
Yeah, just like ask Amir Khan, if you're doing so well, and then, oops, hey, that's what those lights look like. Dave.
You know, the one thing that had me a little bit concerned is that you would finish a combination and then you would drop your hands. I mean, did you end up going back and watching that tape? And what was that about? Did your arms get fatigued after that fourth round, fifth round? Was your arms getting on your shoulders? Were they getting tired? Or was just you just got that comfortable?
You know, I actually did get a little comfortable. I got a little comfortable, and, you know, it's actually a bad habit and, you know, something I got to get rid of. I went back, you know, and looked at the tape, and it's something, you know, we're going to go back in the gym, and I was actually back in the gym this morning, and, you know, my dad was telling me that's something we got to work on, is just bringing our hands back and just be a better rounded fighter with our guard up.
You're a big kid, first off, you know, and I was watching, I was like, and I was there live, and I was just like, whoa, man, I mean, is he fighting another guy at 154, or is this guy at 140? That's how much your height was just way up there. obviously you're not going to stay at 154. I mean, I can see your legs and your upper body's growing, outgrowing your legs and stuff. I mean, I used to have that problem too. I still got it. I still got the chicken legs. That's why I never wear shorts and stuff, man. But I could see yourself moving into it. But what do you think? Because a lot of fighters, even at that height, they want to stay at that height to take advantage and have the advantage, always have the upper hand on other fighters. Do you see yourself staying at one, at that division, or do you see gradually moving up to maybe 160 to 168? Because I could see you potentially being in a couple years at 168.
Actually, you know, I'm coming up from 147 because trying to break that 150 mark was a little tough for me. So I actually made weight pretty easily. I feel comfortable. I made a little under 102, and I feel like my upper body is growing, and I'm getting and putting on a little bit more mass. But I see myself staying at 154 for a little bit.
I've heard the way you work out is like no other. Very ambitious. I mean, I've spoken to Ricardo numerous times, you know, and we've talked about you. Tell us your daily routine, because, you know, he was telling me the other day, you know, you're out on the road and you're running and you're doing your stuff. So kind of walk us through how you get yourself prepared and ready to go. And you did get caught with some clean shots, but I don't see it, man. I just don't see any marks on your face.
Actually, you know, I did get caught a couple times, and that's from, you know, that little thing about putting my hands down, you know, and that's one thing we're going to work on definitely, and, you know, bring my hand up, keep my guard up. As far as my training regimen, you know, I decided to add swimming to it, so we're swimming twice a week, and also we added uphill sprinting, and, you know, that was just tough. My strength and conditioning coach actually had me put a guy on my back and try to sprint uphill. So, it was, you know, it's tough, you know. So, you know, it's just off-the-wall things. So try to take it to that next level.
Footwork, more hand speed, or concern about power? Which one is the most important for you in your career while you're moving up in the rankings?
Definitely, you know, footwork is there. Speed, I'm pretty faster. I'm faster than most of my opponents. I'm not saying I'm the fastest, but I'm saying I'm faster than most of my opponents. Probably learn how to sit down on my punches a little more, you know, that little extra thump on my punches.
I like the way you were going to the body, and, you know, the commitment was there. Even some of the times you were getting caught, it was because of the commitment of going that body. But I really like the fact that even though Bruce didn't look like he could hurt you or anything like that, you made sure that you slowed him down. And, I mean, he wasn't a guy that was throwing a whole lot of punches. And I think that's why you got a little comfortable there. You got in that comfort zone because you were feeling like, I got him. I'm throwing I mean, you were throwing 4-6-punch combinations. And I was sitting there going, man, if a guy's throwing that amount of punches, he's not there to fight. But then he kind of woke up and kind of got him going. I'm thinking it was one of those kidney shots that you threw at him. I don't know what you thought.
Actually, you know, I feel like what his game plan was to, like his key to winning, how they're saying on the fight, was to accelerate late. And I feel like what he was trying to do was take me into deeper waters, you know, something that I hadn't done, like you were talking about earlier. And I feel like he was just trying to wait towards the end and get me, you know, off guard, tired, or slow down.
You've had to have harder sparring sessions than that, though.
One of my tougher sparring sessions was with Sergio Martinez. I, you know, that guy just has one speed, and that's just full speed, nonstop, every single round. He just brings it.
Go ahead.
Let's talk about Martinez and sparring with him. Because, I mean, you're a young guy, you know, you're a big guy. But, I mean, talk to me what that's like. I know he's got one speed, but he's not always throwing punches, but he's moving the whole time. Is that what you mean?
Actually, you know, he does a little bit of everything, or a lot of bit of everything. You know, he just lets every punch go at full force. You know, he never takes his breaks. Just goes on throwing power, speed, everything.
Do you feel his intelligence there, that he's always kind of set for something and you're trying to figure out what it is? Or is it all moving too fast to even really process?
I'm not sure to tell you, because it's going pretty fast. But like I tell you, every time these guys try to show me, and I pick it up, you know, I actually get it, and I'm like, oh, you know, that's what I was wrong. And I feel like I was more of a well-rounded fighter for this fight.
How long did you work with him?
With Sergio? It wasn't actually for this fight, but I got to work with him for, I want to say, probably about almost 2 months.
Oh wow. No, okay. So it was a long education. So when you're working in other camps, do you look back to other fighters that you've worked with? Because you've worked at a few different gyms, and do you kind of like, oh, today this guy's kind of presenting me something that I learned with this guy over here and I can use it? Or is it all kind of instinctual and that's the goal?
Actually, you know, from fighting so many different fighters or sparring different fighters, especially the ones that have a lot more experience than I do, you know, it actually just becomes second nature. You pick it up and it just stores in your brain. And when you're sparring, your body just knows, oh, don't do that again or do this. It went well for you last time.
Well, that's what I was talking about, like, you know, earlier when you're deep in the rounds. And I was curious how people think, you know, it was like when I'm sparring, I mean, there's not a voice screaming in my head panicking, but it's kind of telling me do this, do that. I'm kind of talking to myself. Do you talk to yourself or is it like that, just second nature and you're just reacting?
No, actually, you do talk to yourself at times. You know, you have those moments where, like, you just, both of you guys pause and you're like, man, what's he thinking or what's he going to do or what's he trying to set me up for? So you do have those moments where just you tell yourself, you know, stay on point. Don't get careless. Just because he's not doing anything doesn't mean he's not going to set you up for something.
It's kind of like being at the club a little bit. You know, you're kind of like that awkward pause, and then you have to make a move. So what's next for you?
I actually don't have anything set up right now. You know, there's the fight. I just, there's talks maybe trying to get on the Canelo card. I was talking with my manager, Joel, but, you know, nothing's for sure yet. Nothing's set in stone. So, you know, I'm just back in the gym doing my thing because I'm a gym rat.
What's that like working with Joel? I mean, he's been there next to the guy that was on the very tippy top of the mountain. Does he have, you know, good stories or, you know, good advice constantly to impart things to look? Let's not go there.
This is a good party story.
No, definitely. You know, he's a real cool guy. You know, he's always there for me. Anything that I need, you know, inside and outside of the ring, he's just a real cool guy, real humble, down to earth. And, you know, he does have a ton of stories and, you know, he has a lot of knowledge. Like you said, he's been with one of the biggest names in boxing. He's been some of the biggest fights in boxing. So, you know, I always ask him, you know, like, what else do I need to do? Tell me and I'll do it. You know, whatever I have to do to take it to that next step, because, you know, I want to learn.
And I'm over getting choked by our about my poor joke and stuff. But no, I met Joel. You know, I had a great conversation about him. I'm about you. And someone's got to mute their mic. Mute your mic there, Gabriel, please. There you go. And he had a lot of good things to say about you. You know, I mean, we had the conversation about the fight, you know, and he was really pumped up and he seemed like, you know, he was, you know, we both, like he said, the sky's the limit for you. You're only growing and he's really interested in seeing how well you're going to be developing, you know, because you can only see that you're getting bigger. You know, I mean, that, like I said, you oversized your opponent. And I like to see when you start sitting down more on those punches. And when you start landing them, because the speed and the footwork is, obviously, it's there, you know. But I think more people are just waiting for you to get into that man strength and how it develops and how it's, you know, transcend into the speed and to the boxing. So I'm looking forward to you moving up, man. It was fun seeing you that night. And I had to completely agree with Joel. I mean, I think you have a bright, bright future in the sport.
Definitely, you know. I just, you know, I work my hardest every single day, you know, I never let up, and like you guys are saying, you know, the sky's the limit, and I just want to keep working towards becoming a champion of the world, because, I mean, that's every boxer's dream, is to become a champion of the world. But, you know, it's like my dad says, you know, there's only a few champions of the world, so you got to work hard, because if
right.
It was easy, everyone would be a champion of the world. Definitely, you know, actually, you know, that's exactly what Joel was saying last time. And, you know, that's what I want. You know, I want to be, you know, and a champion of the world and be remembered and recognized, you know, because that's my goal, you know, it's to work hard, you know, become champion of the world and take care of my family.
Well, we're going to end up letting you go, and fans, if you're in listeners, you want to follow Hugo on Twitter, you can. It's HugoBoss805. He's over here at the Extreme Boxing with us. He was gracious enough to show up and do our first Ustream, and even though it's a little hectic, we're still trying to figure everything out. We got you know, people going underneath the table, plugging in stuff, and Hugo's lifting up his legs, but he's maintaining himself, and he's keeping himself a professional, and it's great, man. I'm glad you came out and supported Leaving the Rings Radio's first Ustream.
No, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it, you know. Actually, it's history in the making when you guys make it big. I was on your guys' first show. Thanks. Thank you, Gabe. I appreciate it. All right, man. Thank you. I appreciate it.
And, you know, it's a little warm over here, and we got the ventilation with the back door open, and folks are crowding up in here and stuff. I'm going to switch headphones really quick, give the headset back to Josh McDaniel, and then we're going to have Efren. He's here, too. He's going to be talking about his coming fight, and Efren's going to come over. He's going to be correcting us on how to say his last name, because we butcher it up every time we mention his last name, man. He's out of the wild card, you know, and I've met him a few times. He's a great, great kid, and I like the way he fights, even though he did lose the fight before, but I don't see why he can't make a comeback, you know. I think it would motivate him, you know. What's the matter? Can't hear him? Why, what happened? Oh, hold on, let me switch over. Let me throw Gabriel on this one here. We're going to figure out right now what's going on with Gabriel's mic.
He's starting my computer. Somebody unplugged it. So it, yeah.
I'll be back on in just a second. You guys talk amongst yourselves.
There we go. All right, we're going to figure out what happened with Gabriel. He ended up going offline before we can even get Ethan on, because we need a third mic here, man. And I'm sweating. I got, you know, water going. I know. I got... It's all nerves over here. I'm going to patch in Josh, man. We're going to talk a little boxing here. We're going to patch in some fight fans, too. Well, Gabriel and Gabriel finds out what happened. He was disconnected while we were live. We're trying to get him back in. And then we're going to have Efren come on with us and speak to us a little bit about his fight coming up and about the comeback. Like I said, you know, I always think, and I know fight fans, they always go, well, you know, if a guy loses or something happens, that's it. You'll write them off. And I've always thought, oh, do not step on cords. My bad. Okay, I'm stepping on cords. It was me that did it, so I apologize for stepping on cords. But I've always said, you know, when a guy doesn't get the win or he ends up losing, that's not the end of the world for them, you know? I don't know why fight fans or even promoters, it's mostly the promoters that do it, you know? I don't think it's, you know... the fans that more or less would jump on it. I mean, you do get those fans that go, yeah, that's the end of it. It's done. I'm off the wagon, and I'm not going to follow the guy. I tend to be one of those fans that go, I want to see what he does next. I want to see exactly where he goes from that point. Does he get back in the ring? Does he crumble? Was he all hype? Did he make adjustments? Did he realize he's got to make adjustments? Does he realize he has got to work three times harder? And does he realize that boxing is not something you will ever master? I always cringe when I hear guys go, he's a master of the sport. Even like Floyd Mayweather, you know, he's a master. Yeah, you know, he's undefeated, and he does a lot of things well. But there's always somebody out there better training, trying and figure you out. That's the puzzle of boxing. That's why we love the sport, boxing.
Definitely, and sometimes, you know, it takes an L to, you know, to get back on that right level, to get to learn. You know, you need to take a loss sometimes to learn the things that you weren't working on right, and make you, you know, more hungry as a champion. You know, to be that, you know, all-star, you know, elite fighter. You know, you learn that way. And like you said, even with guys like Floyd, like you still, you know, not everyone's perfect. You can always. Something, there's always someone has a flaw, you know?
No, I definitely agree. And I believe we got my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, the Dark Cloud. Let's make sure.
I'm back. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear now and stuff, you know?
So hot.
So give us like 5 more minutes, and then we're going to have Ephraim come on with us and speak to us here on Leaving the Ring. And I want to go back and talk a little bit about that with you, Gabriel, about how when a fighter does hit a bump and how some people will just write the guy off rather than finding out, hey, what's next for him? Does he rebound? Does he get himself back on track? And, that should be a given chance. That should definitely be a given chance because, to me, that's what I think, that's what boxing really is, what is made of, is to see guys bounce back from a hiccup.
Nowadays, is actually a big part of this, is everybody gets really excited about the undefeated record on the networks.
Go ahead.
I think Floyd has been a big reason for this. Is everybody gets really caught up in the undefeated record. They want the pristine, the O next year number. For some reason, that is equated with being a better fighter. And I don't agree. It's sort of like people look at skills and say, that guy's a star. And those two things don't always match. I think a fighter finds out exactly who he is after he loses, when he meets adversity for the first time, and he has to look inside of himself and say, do I go back and I train harder? Do I look at the things that I did wrong? And how do I fix those things? Am I able to fix those things? And then we find out who that guy is. That was why I was kind of bummed to see like the Ortiz and Berto rematch not happen. I wanted to see how Berto faced a guy that beat him.
Right.
You want to see a guy face his demons. It doesn't always have to be that. Amir Khan never won any part of Brady Prescott ever again. Granted, the guy's career didn't ever really match up, but still, if a guy beats me, knocks me out in 1 minute, and takes away my ode that way, I'm going to want a piece of that guy at some point, especially if I get titles back. But we kind of find out about Khan. Yeah, he'll face all the bigger names, but that dude that knocked him out in a minute wants no part of him. With Ephron, or Ephrain, will tell us how he pronounces his name correctly. I want to find out now, after the loss to Rico Ramos, how does he bounce back? How does he react to this? Some guys, man, they fall to a black hole, and you never really see them fight again. Some guys get right back on the horse. I have a feeling he's going to be that kind of guy, that he's going to get right back to it. He's going to get right back in the mix and start to fight again and not let it get him down too much.
I've met him a few times, and after seeing him prior to that before, he doesn't fall in that category of I'm going to disappear. He falls in that category as of this is a hurdle. I'm going to jump over that hurdle. I'm going to find out what's next for me, and I'm going to find out where I stand in the sport. And who's better to let us know where he stand after this loss? How has he been dealing with it? How does he cope with it? And has he went back and watched it? Because a lot of times a loss can be a little bit harder and thicker, or it could be either a checkpoint, or it could be a pass through to the next level in your career, because maturity falls into learning how to lose and picking yourself up. But we'll find out from him and stuff. So let's get him down over here, and then we're going to speak to him in bit. We're going to let him know. He's going to definitely tell this story and what happened with Rico Ramos. Because, if I remember correctly, he was the favorite in that fight. I'm not sure. If I had him.
Oh, yeah, Rico was a guy. Yeah, he was coming off a loss. We both picked him to win. I didn't really think a lot about Rico Ramos. What's up, man? I expected more of a, kind of a hard-nosed guy to just kind of get inside on him and start to work him and take him out. But instead, what happened. And Ramos was the one that came out on top, an eight-rounder. Maybe if it had been longer, it would have been a little bit different. If Ron had gone the distance with, Fernando Beltran and won that fight, he's been the distance, several times. So we'll talk a little bit about what this matchup was. It could have been, a styles make fights kind of thing. And Ramos is a mover. He's a tough guy to deal with in terms of the speed like that. And not everybody gets to see that look very often in order to be prepared for it. So you guys all squared away? We're all right. Well, welcome to the show. Hey, man. Well, this is our first time live. We seem a lot more nervous than we normally are. It's a lot easier when we're just sitting at our house with a beer and, nobody can see me. Let's get right into the fight. Talk to us about the Rico Ramos fight. How did you feel about it?
Uh,
recently they moved the fight down from a 10 rounder to an 8 rounder. And as you saw, if you saw the fight, I was getting stronger. I get stronger as the rounds go, and Rico was dying out. You know.
That's what he does, right?
Yeah.
He kind of faded.
He came out really strong, and I started off slow.
When did you find out that they were going to move it from a 10 to an 8?
Maybe, I'd say like a week before the fight.
Did they give a reason for that?
Something to do with television, due to television.
Right. So something like, as in Al Heyman told TV, hey, we want an 8-rounder instead of a 10-rounder. And then they went, oh, okay.
That just kind of threw me off right now, what you just said. I can't believe that they even did that. I mean, so did they even give you an option to do this? I mean, because, you know, a lot of times what TV will do, they'll come up to you and say, or a promoter will say, hey, we're going to change this. You know, either you were supposedly supposed to fight a bantamweight, and now you're fighting a welterweight. It happens a lot in boxing. And then they say, well, if you're not going to play a game with us, well, guess what? You're not going to ever have another TV day. Did that happen to you?
Pretty much. It just said that, you know, they just said this is going to happen. This is going to happen. We're going to put the fight down to take it down to 8-rounder instead of 10. They didn't give me no option. I had to go with it. You know, I had to roll with a punch and accept the fight, you know.
So that already tells me your mind frame going into this fight. If I was in your position, my mind frame would be kind of messed up, because it's almost like I got punked. Do something I didn't even want to do. And then I go in there and I got to fight a guy now that has speed, has two hands, and at the same time, he's got the up on me.
Yes, exactly. And he fought like an amateur. He just threw a lot of punches, a lot of arm punches. I felt like I landed the harder punches. I still feel like I won the fight, looking back at it. And so did a lot of people that I know.
That's always a thing. You know, I was watching, like we were watching the Olympics yesterday. And the other day, it was 2 days ago, Anthony Joshua. I didn't think he won his first fight. And you could see at the end, when the final bell rings and they start to walk back to their corners and everybody's going to take their gloves off, one dude is like all excited and the other dude looks a little grim. Do you just know inside when you've been, maybe when you've been outboxed and outpointed as opposed to beaten, is there a difference?
Oh, you actually, you really don't know now when the fight, because you're so into focus on the opponent and getting the job done. You really don't know. You don't see what the crowd sees, what the announcers, everybody sees, until you see the fight again on like record. You know, just go through it again and watch it. Then you know, like I did my last fight. I seen it and I thought I won the fight.
So you didn't even feel when you walked away at the last bell. You just were like,
I felt like I won the fight. And when I seen the replay, that just confirmed it for me.
That's the difference. Like that's what Dave, both Dave and I picked you to win. And it was the difference of professional punching, guy that's going to go to the body, then you're going to work upstairs. Like there's a beginning and middle and end to your fights. You know, you start a certain way, then you're trying to do certain things in order to have something in the final end, the back end of the fight, pay off for you. With Rico, it's like the same round, like over and over again. He's going to move around, pot shot, then move away and kind of do that.
Right.
It's I almost don't want to award somebody that went, okay, yeah, you're faster, we get it, but what else can you do? He's kind of one-dimensional in that sense.
He was getting his punches in and holding a lot too, and unfortunately the ref wasn't doing much to separate, you know, he wasn't giving me the chance to really throw my combinations after he got his combos going. But when I did, I landed the more harder, more solid punches, which is professional boxing. He was he's still to me an amateur. I don't think it had much effect on me. It made me hungrier. I went back to the gym, and now I got a call for my next fight, which will be September 21st on Showbox. And the hunger's there. It's still there. And I want to go out and prove that I belong in this division.
They would even want to get with you again.
I don't think so. And I wouldn't take the fight unless it's 8 rounders. I wouldn't go 8 rounds knowing it. Because, you've seen what happened in the fight. I get stronger as the fight goes, and he dies out. And
what's a bigger dream for you as a fighter? To be undefeated or to be a world champion? Did you ever think of yourself as like, I'm going to be like Floyd, 40-0 or 42-0 now? Or did you think maybe somewhere along the line I have some bumps and bruises, but I'm going to get me to that title?
I have some bumps and bruises, but I mean, I thought maybe after the world title, I never imagined losing prior to that. But if anything, it's made me hungry again, so when I'm out there again, I want to fight Rico, Ramos, or whoever's champion. I want to be up there.
I gotta say,
yeah, I mean, I think when I was younger, I think I had a huge temperament too, but a lot of anger, and that's what got me in the sport of boxing. I just don't know. I don't express it all the time. I hide my feelings. I don't let everybody see.
You just show them in the ring.
Yeah, just show them in the ring, and also when I'm training, just take my frustration out, hitting the bag or whatever.
Absolutely.
It kind of mellows everything else out, doesn't it? You beat up on somebody or they beat up on you for a while, and then you leave the gym and it's like, I don't really need to be angry at anybody.
Peacekeeper now. I don't want nobody fighting outside when we're... Yeah.
Yeah. Describe yourself. How do you think of yourself as a fighter? Do you think there's still room to grow? Do you think you can look at that Rico Ramos fight and say, okay, I felt like I won, but there are things I need to improve?
There's not much now, but I know one thing is that I'm made for TV. My style that I bring, everybody loves it, and they want to see me back in the ring. So.
Like when Amir Khan got knocked out, everybody was kind of like, oh, well, they're kind of off the bandwagon. This wasn't one of those. I thought that your stock, if not rose, at least stayed right where it was, and people were like, yeah, I still want to see that guy. It didn't turn anybody off. So at least that's a good thing. I like that. You should make that your nickname, Made for TV. I kind of like that. But you're an action guy, and I don't think that style ever goes out of fashion. Like we were watching when we came in and set up, we're watching Ward Gotti on the TV, and it's like Goodfellas. When it's on, you got to stop and like watch it. It's just one of those things. You think at some point you're going to have one of those, just an all out knockout drag out war?
I think so. As long as I get somebody that stays in the ring and just willing to go toe to toe. Yeah. Then
at least 10 rounds.
At least 10 rounds, yep. Then it'll be because I changed my style when I turned pro. I said I want to be a crowd pleaser. Just win my fights, but win them exciting too.
You were more of a stick and move guy in the amateurs?
I was.
That's the game though,
yeah.
Right? Yeah, I mean, we're kind of watching that balance this year. Have you watched the Olympics at all this year?
No, I haven't got the chance to catch any fights, but...
I've caught a few of them, and they seem more... like pro style now. The guys are a little more aggressive, and it's not so
like fencing or something, you know, where guys are just kind of pointing each other, but they're actually kind of going for it this year. Maybe we start to get closer to that, more of action, because I don't know how you feel, but when guys stay in the amateurs for like 150, 200 fights, they get stuck that way. And we get to see a lot of guys that just don't fight like pros anymore. Rico Ramos would be a prime example. There's a few others. I think Berto took a long time to get more like a pro. Andre Ward took forever to get like a pro. Even still, it's not the prettiest style in the world to watch, you know. I kind of like it. But Dave?
You know, when we're talking about your style, you know, being made for TV and stuff. And you know what? I got to agree with you because everybody that I talk to, and because a lot of times I don't get a chance to go and see you at Thompson when you're fighting over there at the Doubletree, but everybody says, you know, it's a great, fun style because of the fact that you throw punches, you're willing to sit there and trade, and you get caught sometimes, you know, and fortunately, people like that, you know. They don't always want to see that stylistic, you know, slip punches, be a counter puncher. They want to see aggression, you know. But at the same time, do you think that you have to meet it somewhere halfway, being made for TV, but at the same time, be a little bit more cautious in the way you approach your fights?
Yeah. Depending on the fighter who you're fighting, you have to have different game plans. And I always bring different game plans. Even if I'm cautious, I still manage to make it exciting. Yeah.
Absolutely, man. So next for you is going to be on Showtime, you said, right?
Yes, yeah, a Showbox against Jonathan Romero. He's 20-0, 12 knockouts.
Ooh, Colombia, man. That's tough guys, you know. Those are tough boys right there.
Yeah. Well, we haven't got to that point yet. I just found out yesterday about this fight.
Oh, okay.
But I've been in the gym. This fight came along yesterday. Now we're going to look for some sparring partners that can match his style.
Do you think that this fight here on Showbox, is it more of a make-it-break-it situation for yourself to maybe with the people that are dealing and handling you where they're thinking maybe that loss, you know, is he going to excel from it, or does it get dark? Is he fighting demons, and that you need to prove yourself for that made to TV spot?
I think it is, and I'm more than ready for it. It'll matter.
Well, brother, thank you, man, for coming on, you know, for doing our first time, the Ustream and everything, you know, a little crazy, we're getting everything going, but you made it, and I heard you were stuck in traffic for a minute, you know, and the heat and stuff, but hey, thanks for showing up, and can't wait to do it again with you, brother.
Me neither. Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Appreciate it.
All right.
And while Dave is playing musical headset, that's a really lovely view on Ustream of Dave's midsection. I want to go ahead and hit our sponsors again. Once again, we were sponsored by El Pescador Mexican Restaurant in Fillmore, California. The food was excellent. And Extreme Boxing School is where we're sitting here now, staring at me on Ustream along with Dave's midsection in Santa Paula, California. That's the Extreme Boxing School. And finally, we are also sponsored by the Glen Tavern Inn in Santa Paula. It's 101 years old, a little spooky, a little bit haunted, but very, very cool, I have to say. Our room is lovely. We have two beds, just putting that out there. Separate beds.
Yeah, exactly.
We're saving it for marriage. So we just had Alfonso Gomez walk through the door. I think we're going to have him sit in with us in just a few moments. Dave, I want to pass it over to you. I got to let you know because that way I can mute my microphone. And you...
Yeah, definitely. Alfonso Gomez is here. He was in San Jose, California. He shot Sean Porter. Obviously, it didn't sway his way. We're going to find out, man, how he feels about that fight. It was a tough fight for him. You know, he was getting tagged quite a few there. I'm wondering if he's going to continue his boxing career. And then a little later, we're going to see some youngsters here, some amateur get down and dirty in the ring. They're going to do some sparring here for Leaving the Ring for the audience and the listeners, and we can check it out. That's why we're here at the Extreme Boxing in Santa Paula, California, to show our appreciation and our love for this sport, because without gyms like this, without us supporting gyms like this, man, that you know, these are the gyms of the sport of boxing. We don't support this, and we don't help out the coaches that come over here. And a lot of the time, these coaches are struggling to pay their bills, get the light on, make sure that there's the proper gloves, gauze, a ring here, you know, hand mitts to provide for our sport. If we don't step up to the plate and show them the recognition and the appreciation that we have for them, this sport will even fall deeper into that. It won't disappear, but it could lessen the talents of our sport. So we got to make sure that we show here on Extreme Boxing that we're supporting them. And this is not the first time. This is our first show. So just like before, when we started Block Talk, you know, we had to iron out the kinks. We're doing it now. Our next one should get better and should keep going and stuff. I'm just very appreciative that Extreme Boxing did take the chance to say, you know what, let's do it. Guys, down and boxing here, 3 hours of boxing talk with Leaving the Ring, and I thank them a whole bunch, and they you know, they've been treating us right, they've been treating us like kings, giving us water bottles after water bottles, taking us out to eat.
This guy's a bottomless water bottles, let me tell you, it's amazing, and he takes down the plastic, but what's nice is that we, you know, this idea, and this is Dave's idea, was to start doing live stuff directly from gyms, was to give back to boxing, so always kind of taking And not just straight reporting, but taking you into the environment. I mean, this is the heart and soul of the sport, is the boxing gym. The talent begins here, starts at a very young age, as you'll see these kids go at it in sparring sessions for us. But we want to hit pretty much every gym that we possibly can throughout the Southern Cal or Northern Cal area. Or across the country, if you're interested in having us come out and do a live broadcast from your show. It's something that we're really excited about doing. It's kind of a next step. We've talked about it for a while, and, yeah, there's a few kinks. I mean, it's always going to be that way in live TV. But, you know, I'm having a good time, man. I can't wait to go back to El Pescador.
Yeah, and, you know, we were really nervous in the beginning because we were nervous in the beginning because, like I said, it was our first time doing it, so we were kind of all scrambling around. You know, my mind is going in different places. A lot of the times I got my desktop, and now I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and I'm communicating with fans, and I'm making sure that we're getting the show out. This time it's a little bit different because we have literally about five or six different things going on, and then we have fighters here that are sitting and waiting, and then we do have people here waiting, you know, they're listening and watching the show, and then, like I said, we're going to have some amateur fighters. They're going to show what they've been learning here at the Extreme Boxing. They're going to show us what they got, you know, a little bit of a showcase, man, and I'm excited to really see the kids. That's what I'm really excited to see, is what Extreme Boxing has been producing here out of their gym out of Santa Paula. We're going to be getting Alfonso Gomez, Superman Alfonso Gomez here. What's up, brother? How you doing, man? here with us on Leaving the Ring, and then we're going to talk some boxing. We're going to talk about some upcoming fights, some predictions here. We're going to analyze them, break them down, and then we're going to do our fight schedule. But before our fight schedule, we're going to have the kids. They're going to get up there, and they're going to mix it up a little bit here for us on Leaving the Ring. So let's get Alfonso Gomez down over here so we can talk to us about his past fight Saturday night. It didn't sway his way, and where does it leave it? Where does it all go from here with Alfonso Gomez? I'm curious about what he's going to say. It was a really tough fight, man, with Sean Porter. You know, he's always been game. And I've said this last week, you know, Alfonso stepping in the ring has always been the underdog. I remember with the Contender Series, the guy was the underdog. But he's always seemed to find his way to get himself back into the mix. I'm wondering, though, is he now – well, not even now. He has been. He's always been noticed and looked at as an opponent, not as a guy that's going to be a successor.
Well, that's, you know, to me, looking at that Porter fight and coming into it, I felt like it was an appropriate fight for both men. You know, it was the kind of opponent that Alfonso certainly could beat, and at the very least, he was going to take him to the limit. And that's exactly what both men did, was, you know, they went at it. It was a solid, entertaining fight throughout. Porter got the nod, but he got the experience that Alfonso Gomez brings to the table. He's a guy that can do a little bit of everything. He can bang, he can box, he's going to show you different looks, even a couple different looks in one round. And it was a solid test for Porter. It was a fight I was kind of had trouble picking. You know, I kind of went with Porter, but at the same time, I did see Alfonso Gomez had many ways, different ways that he could win the fight. It came out, you know, against him, but there was no shame in losing. I thought it was a hell of a fight. And we're all set up, we're mic'd up with himself, Alfonso Gomez. Welcome.
Thank
welcome
you.
To the show, man.
Thank you. It's real cool to be here. I've seen you guys on the Facebook and internet and all that, but I'm here now.
Alfonso, first off, I guess a lot of fans are wondering, and you did put it up on Twitter that, you know, you know, thank you for all the support. I follow everything that you always do and that you send us here on you know, in your career-wise. I'm trying to adjust my mic here and stuff, so I lost my focus of concentration. But with this loss here, you know, and you were getting tagged a little bit more than we're kind of used to seeing, you know, where do you go from here? Is it a stop for you? Do you concentrate on something else, or do you continue with your career?
Well, that's a good question, and that crossed my mind. But when I put, you know, real balance on what happened, you know, going into this fight, I don't like putting excuses. That's why I never gave interviews on anything that was happening during my training. But, you know, I think there's no mystery that I pulled out of the Jesse Vargas fight because I had, you know, back problems. And previous to that, I pulled out of a Chavez Jr. fight because I had, you know, my elbow problems. Well, going into this fight, you know, those two problems have been bothering me for the past 2.5 years. So they really stopped me from fully 100%, you know, training. Not that I didn't train, not that I didn't run, and not that I didn't do what I had to do in order to be as best shape that I could be. But I think I wasn't there like 100% because, you know, sparring only 3 days out of the 15 that we had scheduled because of the injuries, then that really tells you, oh, man, I wasn't there 100%. Yeah, like I said, I don't like making excuses. Even the, you know, even that day of the weigh-in, you know, my manager and everybody's telling me, dude, if you don't feel like you're there 100%, we can pull you out, you know, and the manager is going to take, you know, have to deal with certain issues. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's your health, it's your career. And I said, man, I don't care if I'm an 80% or 70%. I can beat this guy because I see him stay. I see what he could do. And I was very confident that I could beat him. But being in there, you know, he was much faster than I thought he was going to be. He could take a punch and the body shots because I hit him with good body shots and I could see him like getting winded in there, but he just took him very well. And, you know, it wasn't that I was tired at the end. Maybe I was just a little weaker, which is a little different because my wind was good. I was still throwing punches. I was still trying to finish strong, but I was just wasn't there 100%. So with that in mind, the first question that you say, what comes next? Well, if I want to continue boxing, which is something I want to do, I need to fix myself first. And based on if it's fixable, if it's not fixable, then yeah, I have to, you know, put on a radio, internet radio show or something and go from there. Or if but fixable, we'll fix it up. And then I do want plan to come back and give it another try, but feeling healthy in the training and feeling healthy in the fight.
You mentioned the Chavez Jr. and then you mentioned, you know, the Jesse Vargas fight, you know, when he had to pull out due to injuries and stuff, you know. And obviously when that happened, there was heavy criticism. So was that even part of the decision, too, where you were like, you know what, I've done this. I've been here before. I don't want to be criticized again for being pulled out. Or was it also, too, the fact that if I pull out again, I may not get another chance to fight a guy out there to prove or to move myself up to that championship level to go after a title?
Exactly. That did, those exactly are the things that crossed my mind because it's not even the critics or the reporters or the fans. What counts here is the promoters. Maybe they're going to start labeling me as an unreliable fighter, that they do all this promotion around, and the last minute he has to pull out with injuries or whatever. So, yeah, I didn't pull out of this fight, and I think, you know, not pulling out was better than actually doing it. Doing it was going to label me maybe in that manner or getting criticized a lot for doing it. Maybe that chance wasn't going to arrive again. But actually being in that fight, which was a good fight, I have to give it to Porter, who helped me make this fight really exciting because he had the speed. He outworked me. I connected him better with better punches. But at the end of the day, it was close, and they gave it to him. It's fair, I guess.
You know, I've always said that you have one of the best, you know, right hands in the business. You know, when it lands,
it lands. You know, you got good range. You have a good sense of that range. You know. But that already being said, with Deshaun Porter, the speed did. I saw that. It kind of really threw you off just a little bit, you know. But you've been in there with faster guys. What made him so much different from the other guys that you faced? Because, I honestly thought that Porter, you know, I picked Porter to win, but I wasn't confident, you know. And I said, last week, I go, I'm not sold on it. You know, I think Alfonso can pull this off because you've been there. You know, you're a veteran guy. You know what it takes to get to, and I thought that you have fought way better oppositions. But what made it that much different on that night?
Well, like I mentioned earlier, it really wasn't that Porter beat me. I think my lack of preparation for this fight, which wasn't much, but it was enough for him to beat me, is what actually caused this to happen. So like I said, you know, I want to fix my issues, come back at 100%. So doesn't matter what people say, so that I say, oh yeah, I lost this night because it's just time to go. And not, oh, I lost this time because I wasn't 100%. I don't want to say that no more. I just want to make sure it's because of me and not because of little injuries here and there.
Absolutely. And I've always said there's a difference between excuses and reasons. And you have reasons. You know, you have legitimate injuries. Is it lower back?
The lower back, closer to the glute, which doesn't allow me to do the churn for the right hands. And the elbow, yeah, every time I hit, or I block and they hit it, it hurts. So there's an issue there. I haven't been able to fix it because, you know, there's always a fight coming. What about next fight? Oh, now, okay, I'm going to take the break and really get it fixed. No.
Is that something that you think you're going to have? Is it a surgery thing? Do you think it's a rest and let your body heal naturally for a while and then see where you're at kind of thing?
I have no idea. I have to go see an orthopedic surgeon, get MRIs maybe, and check it out. If it needs surgery, then surgery it is. I can't do nothing about what has to be done, but it has to be done, that's for sure.
Jumping back to your fight with Canelo, which Dave and I have talked about extensively, that thing was stopped way too soon. And it seemed like you were giving him movement, you were giving him a lot of problems, and then the first sign of trouble, ref was like, all right, that's enough of this. How did you feel about that fight? Did you feel like you didn't get a fair shake?
Of course, and I'm I was very disappointed for a bit because, I don't know, I'm way too honest sometimes or too good to really open my ass at what things happen. You know, Oscar De La Hoya being a fighter, who was a fighter, should understand the sacrifices that we go through and the excitement that we get when they tell us, guess who I got for you, Canelo. So that emotion, you start like tearing up of joy because of so many years of hard work, sacrifice, and you think of all the possibilities. Oh yeah, winning this fight, it's going to take me to bigger things, you know, many things, you know, many dreams and ideas. And then you look back to all the years that you actually sacrificed and you start thinking, man, it's true. When you sacrifice and you persistent, it pays off. So all these things accumulate in your life. And then, obviously, I trained hard for that fight as much as I could, like I said, with my injuries, but I trained the best. And there I am in the fight thinking, yes, I'm doing good. This is happening. For somebody to take it that quick and that easily, it's a crime in a way, especially if you've been a fighter and you understand how it is. But I guess stepping outside of my mind, if it is a business and you saw what happened, it was just, you know, the first sign of trouble, get him out of here. We don't want to complicate things. We already have plans lined out for the next 4 years for this guy. So, you know, it's the business and it sucks. And people know it. You know it. And you've spoken about it in the radio show. And even the fans know it. But, you know, at the end of the day, the fans still buy the pay-per-views. At the end of the day, you guys still, you know, talking boxing. So this little one lost, this little one Mexican who lost, okay, let's just move on. But me, it was my world. It sucks.
I was there ringside for the Calvin Green fight, and I thought you started to really turn a corner as a fighter. You were really settled into yourself. You took him out really fast, which nobody at ringside. We expected a longer fight. I thought he was going to give you some resistance. You just knocked him out. And then heading into that fight, I thought, okay, he's undersized, but this is kind of what Canelo does. But I thought those things would work for you, that your speed being more of a 47 than a 54. And I had heard that, I think it was Craig McEwen, was up at briefly working with Canelo. And
they let him go because he was moving too much, and Canelo was getting mad. And I thought, if that dude, Craig McEwen's going to outbox you, Alfonso's going to be, I imagine you've seen him in the gym, I thought Alfonso would be all around this guy, and that's what it looked like. And to me, it was an odd ending. And I think, like you kind of touched on, fans get used to those things. We get used to when guys get robbed or fights end quickly. It happened again in the Cintron fight, too. That fight kind of ended a little fast. I just kind of wonder, at some point, I mean, how do you keep going as a fighter when you see those things? That just happened to yourself, but to see it happen to other people. How do you believe that you still can win when the stakes are against you?
Well, I mean, it's not about believing or not. It's about hoping more than anything. I mean, I hope this time they don't take it away, or I hope this guy didn't give me a fair chance. And just because that happened, you know, it's hard to really say, okay, I already know how the business is, and they never give me a chance. And they never really haven't, you know, since the contender days. It's obvious that they picked me to be one of the sacrificing lamb, excuse me, from the show. But let me get some water. But I was able to, you know, surpass that and, you know, did something for myself inside that show.
When that fight was announced, when you were going to fight Canelo, I even mentioned that I thought that the matchmaking was a little, which we've always kind of criticized with Golden Boy. I really thought that here's a pattern, and the pattern is starting to really reveal itself, where Canelo is getting a certain type of fighter all the time, you know. Smaller guy, doesn't punch a hole, doesn't have that much punching power. But when they picked you, I go, I think they screwed up. Somebody didn't do their job, because your right hand was the punch that he seems to not know how to defend. You remember that? And I said, that's the one thing that Alfonso is going to expose him on. And sure enough, we catch him over and over and over and over again. And I think that with the whole refereeing stuff, I think that they knew it and they figured it out. And they, you know, somebody got their asses chewed out right after that fight.
Well, if you say that the matchmaker didn't do his job well, you know, they still got the judges, and if they still got the referee, if he goes all the way to the end, they still got the judges. So don't worry, somewhere along the line somebody does their job right, I guess.
How good do you think Canelo is?
He's real good. I mean, he punches hard, he's young, fast, and more than anything, he, you know, the team around him make him that good, you know. Pick him the right fighters that suit his style, and, you know, like lighter weights like Josecito and et cetera, et cetera. So, in itself, he's a good fighter, and his team is good. So, yeah.
But okay, the whole Josecito, let me ask you, what do you think about something like that? I mean, a guy that's obviously jumping up two weight classes to face a guy that should really, honestly, if you're a champion 154, why are we not seeing this guy clean up 154 division? Why are we seeing this? And why do you think that this is acceptable for even the casual fans or the promoters? Why do you think that they're allowing this to happen?
Because it still sells tickets. That's why. I mean, Josecito, you know, it's a great opportunity for him. So you can't hate on the underdog. You can't hate on the fact that they're giving him this great opportunity. But a fighter at 140 pounds, he would have as great of an opportunity if it was Garcia, you know, Danny Garcia or Eric Morales. I'm sure it would be real great opportunity for Josecito to be who he wants to be. But, you know, putting him against Canelo, who's a big 154, he's going to come in weighing maybe 168 the night of the fight, and Josecito's going to be coming in at 155 max, I think. That, I don't know, yeah. Maybe there should be a commission to avoid that. That's too much weight difference, or dangerous, you know, practically dangerous more than anything, you know. At the end of the day, punches, right?
You know, and I'm not knocking the whole Josecito. I actually think that this is a much more tougher fight than what his team and other people are thinking about. I mean, Josecito does got a good right hand. He does come forward, and he takes a punch. You know, something he does have in his arsenal. He can take a hit and stuff, you know. I'm just wondering if they're going to end up giving him the Gomez move. If he hurts, you know, do they stop it? Do they take that away from him? And then you're left with an, I mean, because we talk about star power. Even you, you had a little bit of star power. I'm not a little, but you had a good margin of star power. And they did that to you. They took it away from you. They didn't even give you a shot. And you came in with a credible name. You came in with a following. I'm wondering, a kid like Josecito, who hasn't had that built up yet, if they did it to you, they certainly can do it to a kid from Riverside.
Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, it's the business and it is what it is. And, for example, you know, like that Arce fight that he fought, what was it, Puerto Rican or Cuban guy? His last fight, the Cuban hit him, knocked him out, but somehow they were able to manage to call it an illegal punch, and they had a no contest, you know. They find a way, and then it can happen, and people forget about it, and they just move on. So whatever happens in this fight, you know, people are going to forget about it, and boxing is going to keep moving forward.
That's just the sad truth. It is. I mean, it's a business. It's all about selling tickets. It's always about manufacturing stars. I'm curious, you know, looking at you, Ishii Smith, Sergio Mora, Peter Manfredo, looking back on that contender experience, would you have done it all over again? And are you surprised at the way your careers went? Did you guys expect to be bigger stars than this or be world champions right out the gate? Talk about that experience. It was unique to boxing.
Definitely do it again. It was a great experience. It opened my eyes a lot about fighters and the way especially the industry moves, and realize the boxing world moves exactly like the film world and the music world. It's practically about selling tickets and putting butts on those seats. And yeah, I would do it again because it gave me a lot of exposure. And also I would do, you know, people started to know us, gave me great opportunities. If it wasn't for that, I would have taken even a harder road, because I've taken a hard road, but even a harder road than what I have taken it. But thank God that show happened, gave us great exposure, gave me that chance to meet a great manager, and in these great fights that are on the undercards of Manny Pacquiao on HBO pay-per-view, or on the undercards of Floyd Mayweather and Showtime pay-per-view, Showtime. So, you know, I can't complain about the way my career has gone, especially due to the show. So, yes, I would do it again.
It's kind of something I wish that had been more successful. As I look at, like, you know, the UFC and their Ultimate Fighter show, that's the series that saved that whole sport, or at least that particular league, unfortunately. I wonder if we can ever have something like that for us again. I mean, it seemed like they got it right with season one, and then the seasons after that, like, it just, you know, some of those guys, I've seen them fight, but, like, it seems like you guys have had more longevity. Do you think it's because the just 147 was such a nice talent pool?
Who was the guy for the contender series? That's what I'm wondering. Who was picking the crop, you know? And because I know you guys had to have a tournament beginning, right, in order to have a spot. And then did it stop there, or did you have to continue? Because there was a whole interview process as well to see whether or not you had a storyline for TV, right?
Yeah, I mean, first you had to go to show your record, to spar, like a little tournament. And then you had to show if you were likable on camera, if you had good charisma on camera. They made you tape your family, where you live, your life story, to see if they like it. Then they had Stallone and Sugar Ray Leonard interview a bunch of guys, because it started limiting. And I was going through all this process. People started from like 9,000 and started reducing. Then, like, the last 60, you know, from Australia, from all over the place, they went to the NBC studios and met with Stallone, with Jackie Callan, with Sugar Ray Leonard.
What you said about boxing, I've always looked at it that way. I did theater for like 20 years, and I know that industry. And, well, I'm just going to keep talking because it's a good conversation. You talked about how it's the same thing. It's the same hustle. It doesn't matter if you're really good. If you look good on camera. Sell some tickets.
Or sponsors, I am. If you put in viewers on TV or on the internet, that's what matters. More than who you are or what you do or what you say. Because if you say the stupidest, craziest, most offensive, you know, atheist against God.
Broner, like, says some crazy shit, and people just go nuts for the guy.
It doesn't matter. People don't. It doesn't matter what you do. The result is what matters at the end of the day.
Are you unplugged?
No.
We'll be back in a minute. Well, it's good times.
This is the first time you're outside your studio, go to the gym. Well, now you know. You got to start writing. You're going to learn experience.
Yeah. Okay.
With a TED show, this is not going to happen.
I know. That's what we're for. All right.
What's
he say? He says just make sure it's plugged in. That's it.
It's plugged in, but it's threw off. It was all off the show.
Is it?
Yep.
I blame Alfonso.
Yeah.
Who's being too truthful?
I know.
Bob Rapp's
jumping in.
That's enough. That's enough truth from him.
Gonna make sure we're all muted.
Okay, when we're back, I apologize about not getting, I mean, we fell off and stuff. Fortunately, we got unplugged, trying to get us back on Ustream. But we do have Alfonso here still with us. Let me see if we have Gabe. Can you talk in your mic, Gabe, and let me know you're still there?
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. So I'm going to pass it over back to Alfonso, finish our interview. And while you're talking to Alfonso, I will speak. I will be working on you. I'm going to skip back to Alfonso.
If you're still with us after that technical difficulty, I mean, this is essentially live theater. So we're kind of just making this up as we go a little bit, dealing with our technical issues. If you're just joining us, this is leaveitintheringradio.com. We're doing a live broadcast from Extreme Boxing School in Santa Paula, who's one of our sponsors. One of our others is El Pescador, a Mexican restaurant in Fillmore, California. You gotta try the chili relleno. It is very, very good. And the Abundagas are very, very good as well. Also, Glen Tavern Inn in Santa Paula, California. It's 101 years old, a historical landmark. You can view Dave and I there throughout the evening as we'll be staying there. I don't think that actually comes with the room. Continuing our conversation here with Alfonso Gomez, who's patiently just kicking it with us. Let's talk about just going forward. What are your plans? You were saying you want to take a rest, you want to attend to your injuries, and then kind of go forward, and that's pretty much the plan at this point?
Yes, that's a plan. The plan is to heal up, and yeah, definitely keep moving forward, like Rocky VI says, keep moving forward, and yeah, keep trying, and you know, it's always a dream, it's always a pleasure fighting, especially this type of fight that I did with Sean Porter. Really makes me want to keep going because it makes me feel good and gives me a lot of hope, you can say, and a lot of enthusiasm to know that people still enjoy my fights and they still consider me, you know, person doesn't give up. And that's strange to me because people come up to me, it's like, man, I can't believe you just keep going, and they have this euphoric enthusiasm when they're talking to me. It makes me feel good because to me it's something normal. To me it's just normal to be there and trying to win and not quitting. I don't know. To me it never crossed my mind quitting or anything like that. So when people really like express that, it makes me feel like, oh cool, I have something that to me is normal, but to them something extra, which is cool.
Do you think you're going to know that day? I mean, you know, there are some guys like James Toney is still fighting. You know, Yuri Boy Campos is still fighting. And he's got like over 100 fights, like 113 fights, something like that, 114. Do you think, for you, is there a number or is there a specific thing that you're looking for that says, okay, that's enough trying to get where I was trying to go and it's time now?
Oh, yeah. No, I don't plan on keep going like Campos or them guys. You know, I think I am multi-talented, you know, I do, you see my website, goboxme.com, I do all the graphic design and a lot of gadgets and all those, you know, the web development and the web design, I like doing a lot. I love writing music, I have a band and I'll write the music and all that stuff, so I know how to do a lot of stuff and I really don't want to be fighting just to get a paycheck, you know. Right now, I'm still fighting, not because of the paycheck, because I still have that dream. But when that changes, when I realize, like, oh, no, man, I'm not going to be champion. I'm just going to be the stepping stone of another up-and-coming fighters, then I'm going to call it quits. I am sure of that. I'm not going to push myself more than that. You know, when my dream changes from want to be champion and want to keep going and want to capture belts and all that, to changes to, oh, I need a paycheck, oh, I need to pay my rent, then something is wrong. That means I didn't take advantage of the money that I had before and did something to invest, so that boxing is not my only resource of income, you know. But after I retire, you know, I would really like to commentate. That would be cool, be a commentator.
So sticking, just listening to you talk, you seem to have a very objective view of the sport. You understand it, you know, better than most. You know, you've been on TV, you've been
at that mountaintop, even if you're not like, you know, Mr. Pay-Per-View star, to get on TV is the toughest hustle there is. You know, I think you'd be a commentator. Certainly sounds like you've been smart with your money. This is the conversation we're having off to the side while we're dealing with our technical difficulties. Why do you think it is that most fighters don't do that?
It's always hard because I made the mistake at the beginning. You know, I lost a lot of money. I don't want to say how much because some people don't earn that in their, you know, in a lot, many years. And for me, it just went away because I was dumb. But when you start getting a fight with big money, you think, oh my God, I'm going to get more fights with big money. So you spend all that thinking that it's going to come next time. And maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. But you always think that it's going to be there. And suddenly, I broke my hand with Ben Tacky, and I found myself like 8 months without really getting a paycheck, and I didn't have any money. And next thing you know, I have to come back to fight, but we can't get you that pay no more. We got to get you less pay. And so it throws your whole economics and your whole finances out of place. So I think that's the reason why most fighters aren't able to save up or to invest. One, because we don't have the education to do it. Most people that make it in boxing are Mexican or Latinos. And our mentality is that, you know, if we have 20, 10 bucks, I'll spend 20, you know, and all the other 10 to whoever. So
yeah, I wonder where that comes from, but yeah, I know that mentality really well.
Because the mentality of other, you know, like Jews, for example, or an Armenians, because I have Armenian friends, are very, you know, Egyptians, you know, they have $10, and yeah, they spend two, and the other eight, they make sure they make another 10, you know, that's their mentality, and they're born with that mentality, just like Mexicans are born with this mentality of spending more than what you have. So,
I wonder if that, too, is particular to Mexicans who come here. You know, like, so I'm like, my mom's from Mexico, my dad's like second generation, and he's kind of got that. He has 10 bucks, he's gonna spend 20. She's a little more frugal. It's like, we don't really need it, but she still looks at the coupons. You know, like, she's got that very Mexico mentality, where his dad's got the, we're here, let's just, you know, it's land of the free, it's, you know, opportunity is abundant, you know, it just grows on trees. And that's kind of interesting. I wonder, too, if it's, you know, you guys... So often I hear this, you know, particularly I'm dealing with like the Angulo case. They always tell the fighter, you worry about training, you worry about fighting, we got your money, we'll handle that. You let us worry about the business. And I think, in my opinion, too many fighters actually take that advice. Instead of saying, wait a minute, that's not your money, that's me. Let me worry about my money. You know, who was your management throughout this?
My management, actually, he's one of the best managers out there. His name is Gary Gittleson. And he manages only me and Brian Belloria because, you know, he just loves boxing. But more important, he loves the fighters he represents, you know. So he's helped me a lot, try to get, like, a good grip on reality in terms of what my business is. Because, I mean, me, I could dream that I'm the best fighter. And, you know, I want to fight Mayweather. Give me Mayweather, but there's a reality behind why I cannot fight Mayweather. You know, it's not just because I want to. So he lines out really what the business is like and why I can or why I cannot fight and which route is better to go than this or that. So, yeah, he's helped me a lot. He's real straightforward. And, you know, I love him. He's a great manager and a great friend.
He's always seemed like a straight shooter kind of guy. And I find that interesting, too, that comment that you made about how you took, you know, the Ben Tacky fight that happens, and then 8 months later you come back. And in the fighter's mind, and I think most people's memory works this way, you kind of stay like where you thought you were, and then you come back, and it's like the sport always kind of moves on without you. You know, there's always other stars, there's always other, you know, other big fights that have happened, and then you kind of come back and like, wait a minute, I'm not worth the same amount. That's interesting. How do you even deal with that? I mean, you get paid, and then you're going to fight another, 6 months, another 3 or 4 months. I mean, you just got to make that last, I suppose. Most people don't realize that either. They think fighters, they're on TV. They must be getting paid all the time.
Yeah, and what's worse is that we usually have the mentality, not mentality, but we usually believe when we work 9 to 5, because I used to work 9 to 5, they give you your check, And with that, they take away your Social Security, they take away your taxes. So at the end of the year, you do your taxes, and you if they owe you, they pay you, you know. And if you owe them, you pay them. That's simple as that. But in boxing, when they pay you, they don't do that. They pay you a whole amount, no Social Security, no nothing. So in your mind, you're like, oh, I'm going to spend this money, thinking that pretty much they pay you the same. You know, that somebody's going to, at the end of the year, you do your taxes and, you know, you're going to give them whatnot. If you spend your whole money at the end of the year, guess what? You owe Uncle Sam a whole bunch of money. That's why a lot of fighters lose their homes, their cars, and a lot of stuff, because
it's always taxes at the end. Always Joe Lewis, same thing. He's getting nailed with the taxes. That's exactly
yeah.
why, right?
It's just nobody teaches us that, and nobody teaches still. I don't know why they still don't teach. It's like, you know, Golden Boy and Top Rank and now Team, not Money Team, what's it called?
The Money Team.
Yeah, now the Money Team. You know, they should spend maybe a few extra bucks. And not only having a trainer for their fighters, and but not them, it's not really them, it's the fighters themselves, their individual businesses. But at the same time, maybe Golden Boy should protect their fighters in the sense that, hey, also get somebody who does your helps you understand how the business is. You know, we pay you the full amount. You know, we're not paying you with, you know, divided with all your Social Security, 401, or your retirement. Nothing's taken. No, you have to put that away yourself. But nobody tells you that. It's the money, and you deal with it. So there should be some kind of school or some kind of something where they tell the fighters how the business is, and so they can take better care of their money and themselves.
Yeah. Talk about a good after boxing business right there. Is the ABCs of finances? I forget the name of the book, but it's like, you know, like rich folks, they know how to pass on how to keep the money to the kids, but poor kids, we grow up paycheck to paycheck. You know, you're always kind of looking to that next thing and trying to make everything last. That's a really good point. You know, as most of these guys don't know how to do their taxes. And it is, you know, having done theater for so long, it is the same business setup, you know, where you get all your money and you're expected to set it all aside. At the end of the year, I remember my first year as a paid actor, I was like, oh, man, I owe a lot of money. I spent, like, every paycheck. I had no idea. I'd moved out at 17, and nobody really taught me about taxes. And it's probably the same thing for a lot of fighters. How long have you been fighting?
I've been fighting for professionally for 12, and in total 22 years. Yeah.
That's a lot of
money. And I only learned this 2 years ago.
Well, better late than never,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but like I said, it should be something where boxers are aware of how it moves. You know, let them know that they're a business, you know, that they're a business practically, and you hire who you want to hire, and you save up for taxes, just like normal business would. Like, if I'm the owner of a business, this is what I do with my money now. You know, they pay me, they don't pay me when I fight. They pay my company, which is just an entity that gets paid. You know, Little Man Big Heart LLC. You know, so Alfonso Gomez, when he fights, he doesn't get paid. This company, this entity gets paid, and that company, that entity, pays me every month a salary. You know, so I don't have, you know, so I don't have the money. It's not like, oh, they give a homeless, you know, 100,000 or 200, whatever. No, I get my salary. My salary is $3,500 a month. You know, $4,000, and my wife's salary is $1,500. So between the two of us, we have a $5,000 a month salary. You know, doesn't matter how much the company has, you know, or the entity. That you could have a million or you could have zero. But me, as Alfonso Gomez, I get paid something like that. And my taxes are taken away every month. And then at the end of the year, I go with my accountant and I make my taxes as Alfonso Gomez, you know. I much earn is blah, okay, boom. And then I also make the taxes as a company. You know, who did you pay? I pay this. I pay some partners.
That's the way to do it, man. I mean, most fighters, they just don't even, they don't ever get that.
Get paid to spend the whole money in a car. What happens to the whole 12 months? So now I get paid and put the money in the company, but the company every month gives me a salary. And that's what I live with, that salary. If I run on my salary after 3 weeks, then I guess a week I cannot go out and I just have to sit home or whatever because I'm, my salary is gone. Or even if my even if I spend my money before time and I have to pay my car, and I don't have the money, guess what? I'm 1 month late because I have to pay the other month because I cannot go away from my salary just like anybody. I can't dig in my company. Makes no sense, you know. Then I'm doing shit wrong.
Absolutely, brother. Hey, so we're back on Ustream and everything to let everybody know, and the kids are getting ready, and they're going to start sparring and stuff. So I wanted to thank Alfonso for coming out and hanging out with us here on Ustream, even though we had some technical difficulties otra vez here. And like always, when you're doing stuff live, I'm sweating like a dog because I'm over trying to get stuff back and ongoing. Well, brother, I wish you all the best. I wish you to get, you know, back in good health. And see you back into the ring, you know, and handle your business.
Definitely. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Absolute pleasure.
Thank you very much. Yeah. It was nice chatting with you guys. And, you know, hopefully you invite me again. And, you know, we can chat boxing. You know, grab your beer. What do you say? Sit down and enjoy 3 hours of boxing talk. Where's my beer, man?
That's awesome. I know. Where's my beer? There you have it, Alfonso. Cool. Thank you again, man. This is an absolute pleasure. And an education. I think, you know, Dave will take certain segments of our show and he'll put them up on YouTube on our channel. I think that one, Boxers and How to Be a Business 101 with Alfonso Gomez, is definitely one for the books. That was his education. You know, the fact that he even said, like, I figured this out like 2 years ago. You know, towards the tail end of my career, I finally figured out how to manage my money, handle my money. You know, that's something that I think every boxer really could learn from. And here we are. We've got some sparring. I have no idea who these kids are. We've got the red headgear versus white headgear. We're in title. Dave is running around doing sign language with everybody, which I didn't know he knew how to do. And here we go, round number one. The Extreme Boxing Gym.
So right now what they're going to do is they're going to get us the names of the two kids that are sparring. And how many rounds are they doing here, Ricardo? 4 rounds of boxing, 2-minute rounds, right? And we'll get the names of the kids that are in there. Like I said, we get a chance to see what Extreme Boxing is doing and stuff. I'm exhausted, man, you know, trying to get Block Talk back on, Ustream. A lot of people don't understand the things that we normally have to do to go live. Even with Block Talk, you know, we go through a lot of stuff here. And, you know, I want to get the names, but I'm just going to go off of the color of the trunks right now. I like the kid in the red trunks. He's using good footwork, and you could tell that he's been using he's been working on that. He's throwing out his jab. The black trunks is when we get okay now. Beautiful. So we have Rigo Hernandez, and who's 14 years old, and he has the blue shorts, and then Julian Conde, who's 12 years old, who has the red shorts. Oh, and that's Ricardo Conde's son, and he's doing a good job. He's using his jab. Rigo Hernandez, 14 years old, so we have a 2 years difference, and obviously you could see the 14 years of age in the end of the round. I like what they're mixing up. You know what? You know what always amazes me? You always have the smaller guy, right? The shorter kid. That does the stalking, and the taller kid and the bigger kid always seems to be more defensive minded. You know, he starts moving around, and he's the guy that decides to be more of a boxer, not a puncher. With a smaller guy, you would think, I'm going to, you know, maybe move around because I'm being outweighed.
It's almost similar to, like, the smaller guy's like a bully, you know. He needs to be the bully in there and bully the bigger guy, you know. He has that, I would hate to use it, but for all the short people out there, but the short man syndrome, you know.
I don't consider myself short, so I'm not offended by that.
I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that probably hate me right now and just started unfollowing me just because of that comment, but it's okay, you know. I'll tell you this, though, so far this our play-by-play is way better than any HBO has ever done.
Bang! Okay, they're not even talking.
No, I'm waiting for Gabriel to get in the sparring ring with someone else.
I did not bring my equipment. So we will get into a thumb war later. I thought my Xbox up here. Dave, I know, wants to get beat down yet again on the video games. Dave is like an active monkey over here. He's just grabbing headphones and video cameras.
So we have, again, we got Rigo Hernandez and Julian Conde, who is 12 years old. Hernandez is 14. We were supposed to get, like, how many fights, amateur fights they both have, inspirations. When did they start getting involved in the sport of boxing? We didn't get that, though. Ricardo, can we get when they started, how many fights they both have, and what was the inspirations of getting them in the ring here? And how long have they been a part of Extreme? Let's get Ricardo to sit down with us. Okay, so we're being told right now they're not being able to see this.
Oh. Well, that's probably what the problem is.
Yeah, start the broadcast, so I'm not bad.
Hard to play
with
the camera's not clear.
So we got Ricardo, who's one of the guys that helped us out here. At leaving the ring, and we're still trying to figure everything out. Let us know out there, our listeners, if you could see the broadcast of both kids right now sparring.
Now you're not on mute.
And I go back again, the taller kid who's 14 years old, who is Rigo Hernandez. He's right now, he's being the mover, and he's letting Julian, who's 12 years old, do much of the work right now. And I could tell off the bat right away that these kids have been doing it for quite some time, man. You're not going to get that kind of footwork just being a part of a gym for only 6 months, if that. You know, a lot of times you see kids are just more or less, you know, winging it, not having a stance. They got some bounce. They're using it on their toes. I like that. You know, I like your son, man. He's doing a lot of feigning, using this jab, and he's being a stalker. Is that normally the way he fights all the time?
Yeah, that's normally the way he fights. He's been doing this since he was 5 years old, so he's got some experience, and yeah, that's pretty much the way he's. We're trying to, you know, hopefully mimic the style of Miguel Cotto, so you know that's
really?
What we're trying to go for. So
right on, man. You know, that's a little bit different for a Hicano to go after a Puerto Rican type of style, but I like that. You know, I mean, Miguel's got good boxing skills. He's a wrestling fighter. You know, obviously he's an aggressive fighter, and
yes, I can see where you're going with the Cotto thing though. He's got kind of that more compact, shorter legs, but kind of thick. He's going to be a thick kid, maybe, you know, a mid-range guy, somewhere between 140, 160 in there. We always Mexicans, you know, we pray for heavyweights, but you know we don't always get them. But you know what I like that he does is you were talking about his footwork. I like the way he turns off of punches. He seems to pivot off of them really nice. And he's very aware of his angles, whereas the kid in the blue, he tends to square up just a little bit. He's not quite sure exactly what it is that he wants to get done in there. What he should be doing is sticking that jab. He's a taller man with a longer reach. He should be coming forward behind that. But instead, you see the tentativeness, whereas the kid in the red, he knows what time it is. He knows his balance. He's kind of bouncing in and out. He's trying to get the other guy to do something. He knows what his disadvantage is. He's shorter. You know, whereas the other guy hasn't quite figured out how to use that strength.
You know, well, the thing is, too, is that they're having their very first exhibition here at the Extreme Boxing. So nerves do tend to, you know, build up, especially with the younger generation right now. These are the young bucks of the game and stuff. So it's not only do they have somebody in front of throwing punches, but at the same time, they got to get used to the crowd, all eyes on me, you know, and they got to shake that off. You know, when we talk about the square ring drama, the reason why we call it that, it's a big stage. And if you're not comfortable yet, that's why it takes years and years and years. You just can't wake up one day, be a football star, a basketball star, a hockey star, and go, you know what? I'll put on our gloves. You're up against a lot of things. Not only are you up against the opponent in front of you, but you're literally alone. Your coach can only do a certain amount of things, you know. I can see right now that Julian is stepping it up. This is my question is, though, is the you know, who is Rigo, 14 years old, is he maybe a little bit reluctant because of the fact that he knows he's the bigger guy and knows that this is a light sparring session. And because a lot of times people forget, sparring is to correct some of the things that you do. But I go back to with Julian. I love the way he feints hand. You know, but the only thing is with that feint, you got to follow it up with something immediately after that, because the feint is to make the guy make a mistake so that you can capitalize on his flaw.
That's a nice trick, though. Yeah, they both are intelligent guys. They're kind of bouncing in and out, trying to get things done. It's entertaining. You know, they're not waiting. You know, certainly the crowd's appreciative because you can hear the claps. I'm curious to see, though, you know, the kid in the blue, Rigo Hernandez, he's 14 years old, versus Julian Conde, 12 years old, in the red shorts. He really needs to work on his front side offense. He's got to stick that jab. He's got to come in a little bit more, maybe move his head. And I'm sorry?
Hernandez.
Oh, Rigo Hernandez. As a taller kid. Yeah, I really like to see him just telephone pull that jab. I mean, granted, it is sparring, but, you know, against a shorter guy, I mean, you know, that's going to be moving around a lot and giving him angles, he's got to keep track of him. The jab is a great way to do that. It's not to just nullify, you know, the speed of the younger man. But it's solid work for guys his age. Like you said, they know their way around the ring. They seem very comfortable. They both have a really nice sense of range, where they want to be. Exactly where their punches are landing. Not quite. There he goes with that jab.
Yeah, right now it's definitely the battle of the jab, man, and I like that. And I like that now we're kind of seeing a different look from Julian. You're seeing now not that much aggression. Now he's starting to, you know, pull back a little bit to sucker in the taller, lankier kid so that he can now close that distance, you know. And I like that, you know, Rigo Hernandez is starting to, you know, put in those punches, put them together. I think he's now starting to shake off a little bit of the nervousness, you know. I want to get a little bit of information on the trainers that are there. I mean, who do we have? What's the name of the guys that are both advising these young men while they're training? And that was a nice, solid shot right now. That was a good, solid shot. But let's get Ricardo to give us the names of the two trainers that are out here and giving us a little showcase with the two prospects that they have, proteges, pupils.
Well, in Julian's corner, we have his longtime trainer, Francisco Paco Navarro, who's been in boxing for years. And in Rigo's corner right now, we have Blue, Eduardo Elizaraz. And they've both been in boxing for a very long time, have worked with you know, a lot of named fighters, Brandon Rios, Victor Ortiz, Miguel Garcia, Antonio Morito have both been in their corners, and so they're very experienced trainers. They are the head trainers here at Extreme Boxing School.
A little bit about the exhibition that's going to be taking place here in Extreme Boxing. When is it going to happen? When are we going to be able to – is there going to be a ticket sale, or is this going to be an open you know, an open opportunity for fans to come out and check out the kids? What exactly the event? And it's an annual fundraiser that I remember you were telling me. The Extreme Boxing School, first annual fundraiser, right?
That's right, Dave. We have Extreme Boxing School is going to be hosting its first fundraiser this Saturday, August 4th, begins at the event is going to begin at 6 p.m. and it's going to include amateur boxing exhibition, food, music, and in a children's play area as well. And everyone in attendance will be able to enter into a drawing for boxing memorabilia and much more, such as gloves, fight posters, things like that. And 100% of the proceeds from the event is going to help fund annual travel and lodging expenses for the amateur boxers that train here daily at Extreme Boxing School.
You know what? I'd like to get a chat right now if we can get both the kids over here, and we can maybe do a light interview with the boys. And
Definitely.
Yeah. Let's put the kids in front of us here, and let's get them you know, their input, man, of the sport. You know, it'd be really fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's put them right here in the front, right here, Ricardo. Just get them right here and stuff. And again, we're over here at Extreme Boxing School. These guys just—they gave us a nice display, man. You know, we always want to make sure that we give them the recognition.
Go ahead, my partner.
there's excellent work between two young guys in the sport. Maybe they can share it, or you can move the computer closer to them. First off, you know, introduce yourself to everybody out there. There's a lot of people watching right now on the internet. What's your name?
My name is Julian Conde.
How long have you been boxing, man?
7 years.
We were talking earlier, and it said that you're kind of modeling yourself after Miguel Cotto a little bit. Talk to us about that. Why Cotto?
I don't know. I think Cotto's a really great fighter, and if I wanted to be any boxer, it'd be Cotto.
What about him do you like? That his versatility, the way he can kind of do a lot of things? You just like watching him? You just enjoy the way he fights?
Yeah. It's pretty good.
I got a question for you, because a lot of times, you know, kids normally, they're in the sport because they like the workout. They like the fact they get to throw punches, but they don't really follow the sport of boxing. So do you only do one or do you do both of the things at the same time? Are you a fan of the sport, or you just do the sport?
I'm a fan of the sport. This is my my dream. Big dream. My dream is to become the best that I can be. And so far, I guess I did pretty good.
You did great, to tell you the truth. I mean, I loved what you were doing. I like the fact that you have a good sense of your whole surrounding in the ring. You got good footwork. What do you think, though, that you need to work on when you find yourself in there? Because obviously you can't see yourself, but I'm pretty sure your dad or anybody else have done some recording to try to correct what you're doing. Or what is it that your trainer tells you that you need to work on the most?
Throw more punches. I guess that's it.
Well, there you go, man. Well, thanks again. Let's speak to the other young man, Rigo Hernandez. All right. So we got Rigo Hernandez here, 14 years old. He was wearing the blue shorts and a much taller man. So, hey, thank you for coming on and giving us a chance to see what you got there in the ring. So how did you get into the sport of boxing?
Well, like, last summer, like, I don't know. Like, before, I would really be watching into sports, UFC and all that stuff. And my dad asked me one day, you know, hey, my uncle told me about this gym, you know? You want to try it out? And I was like, yeah, you know, I like fighting. So I tried it out, and I ended up really liking it.
You said you like fighting. Were you fighting before you got into the boxing gym?
No, like I like the sport, you know? Like,
gotcha.
Yeah.
What is it about, and this is for both of you guys, I guess, what is it about boxing that you really like?
I don't really know. I still really know, but, like, I give, you know, it's that feeling that every time you get in the ring, you know, you have that confidence. You know, it's a great influence for me, you know, ever since.
Thank you so much.
Ever since I started boxing, you know, I've been coming to the gym, getting that staying out of trouble, you know, hanging out with my friends and stuff. Yeah, it's been great.
It's like a combination of, one, everybody's watching you do your thing, and you're doing it well, but also that you're in against somebody else that's skilled, and you're holding your own, right? It's like all those things. You're hitting them, you're getting hit, you're getting compete on your own. Imagine it's not just one thing that makes you guys love this sport. Where do you guys see yourselves? You guys want to be professionals? Do you want to go through the amateur ranks and go all the way to the top?
Yeah, you know, looking forward to it, you know. So far, I've been pretty good myself. My family supported me, cousins, everything, you know.
You know, I've always said boxing is it's a brutal sport, but it's a loving sport. You get your moms out here, you get your dads out here, you get your family. And let me tell you guys, you young men, something. At 12 and 14 years old, you guys are by far one of the most bravest kids in the world, because it takes a lot of guts to get up there and to do what you want to do. And I've said this to a lot of other, it's this amateur fighting is not about winning and losing. It's about finding who you are. It's about learning. It's about appreciating. And it's about family at the same time. Because remember this, mom and dad created you. So no matter what, seeing you guys up there taking punches, it hurts us as a family a little bit, but they're with you all the way down that road. Don't lose sight of that. You guys continue that. You brave, brave, brave young men, and you make boxing community very proud.
Yeah, excellent work. And I want to ask you guys, too, what's it like having Alfonso Gomez and Ephron here? And you know, we've got this radio show, but we don't really matter. But real actual fighters, you know, that are here watching you guys, does that raise your game a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit, you know. It's a great experience to see other fighters coming to our gym, you know, showing us what to do. And you know, it's great.
But there you go, man. Thanks again, guys. You have a good one. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, they really help. They get my influence, or not my influence, passion bigger, supporting me, telling me to follow my dream and don't give up. That's pretty much it. Yeah.
All right, well, there you go. Well, here at Extreme Boxing. Again, Extreme Boxing School first annual fundraiser. It's going to be happening August 4th. And thank you very much. Thank you very much. Mute that mic right there, Sean. I mean, not Josh. And thank you. Thank you very much. And they're going to be having their fourth annual, they're going to have their very first annual fundraiser Saturday, August 4th, you know. Trying to do that play-by-play at the same time, trying to handle everything else. It gets a little crazier. We're not used to it yet, you know. In Santa Paula, California, hey, come out here, support these kids, support this gym, you know. Be part of the movement. And if you're a hardcore boxing fan and you want to be able to show your appreciation, your dedication, come out here, you know, Santa Paula, California. Even if you don't want to get in the ring, these trainers, they live off of memberships, you know? They're not themselves. They, you know, this doesn't add to their homes or anything. What it does, it adds to keeping sure that these facilities are functional. They got water, they got electricity, they got the proper tools, they get a ring, they get a heavy bag. That's what this whole thing is about, you know? And the only way we can have kids like Regal and Julian in the ring, doing what they're supposed to be doing, learning through real coaches, is that we have to have a functional gym. And the way to have a functional gym is that by coming out here and showing your support. You can't just go, oh, I'm a big boxing fan, and then you don't want to give nothing back, you know? You got to give a little something back, you know? These guys can certainly appreciate it. Like I said, if you don't even want to be a member, word of mouth, let them know. If you're in Santa Paula, if you're in Oxnard, if you're even close by, or if you just want to send them a couple bucks, a check, you know? A few dollars here and there, man, it counts. It helps out these kids, helps them out with, you know, gauze, trunks, headgear, heavy bags. I mean, none of this stuff, it doesn't come cheap at all.
No, none of this stuff is free. It's just like it's giving back on a different level to the sport. I mean, a lot of guys are like, oh, I only watch the fights on TV. I never go to see them. But I'm a big boxing fan, and I always encourage people, you know, go to see more live fights. Go to see this level of fights. Like I was at a club show a couple weeks back, and somebody said, you know, what are you doing here? You know, you cover all the big fights. I'm like, I love boxing. I love boxing on every level. And even if it's a bunch of guys that are going to go the distance or people that you've never really heard of, I mean, you know, it's still a sport that I want to see on every level, you know, and support in every way possible. Speaking of support, we've got a local head coach of a championship soccer team. He's also a talented boxing writer in his own right. Mr. Francisco Salazar has stopped by unexpectedly. We're in his neck of the woods. I think we have to pay him $10 each because we're in his neighborhood, or he's going to break. Yeah, he's going to break Josh's legs. It's not pretty. We are coming down into the fight schedule portion of the evening, and we're almost to the part where I'm going to start doing body shots with Francisco and Dave. So let me pull up that fight schedule, and we'll get right to it.
Yeah, jello body shots over here.
Josh is getting nervous because we're sharing a room.
I'm just looking forward to going back to the restaurant seeing Pearl. That's all.
Yeah. I'm muted. I'm unmuted. All right. Stop touching my button. August 3rd, Friday, 2012, at the Texas Station Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. On ESPN2's Friday Night Fights, Mercito, No Mercy, Gesta, or Hesta, 25-0-1 versus Ty Barnett, 22-1. In support there, we got Mickey Bay, 18-0-1 versus Robert Frankel, 30-12-1. Dave? Also in support there, Jesse Magdaleno will be bringing up the third fight on the Cardo, and we've got our Hugo Boss autographed posters coming up behind us. Should I just keep going?
No, I want to talk about
Marcito. Okay, let's talk a little bit of Marcito.
No, I mean Marcito. I mean, a lot of people have been asking for him to step up. You got to mute that. You see, I got to take care of everything. Everything. No, I don't. I'm lying. But I, you know, we're always going a mile, you know, 100 miles on this radio show, and this just added even more stress. I don't know why we do this, but it just added even more stress for us, you know. Yeah, exactly. You know, but this, the kid Ty, I think he's really gotten in the head of Marcito, you know, and I think that could be a benefit for him, or it could really be painful facing Marcito Gesta. I'm really interested in that fight, man. It's a top rank fight, and Marcito has been out for a minute, but his trainer Parra, he's right there in the mix, you know, and he understands the fight game, and he understands that people want real fights. I mean, granted, Ty is not one of those guys who's going to make you turn your neck and go, oh, this is great. But I think he's marketed this fight. He's gotten to the mind of Marcito. I think it's going to be a good fight, man. I can't wait for it.
Yeah, Ty Barnett is the guy that mute yours now. Ty Barnett is a DC guy. He's going to come forward. He's going to go at Marcito. To hear Marcito break him down, he said he's got a nice lead right hand. You know, he kind of jabs, kind of get you relaxed into the jab, and then boom, he starts coming with the lead right or the straight right. I think that's going to be a problem, but Mercedes seems like he's got them all kind of figured out. My only concern with them is looking forward to those big fights, and a lot of our last few interviews we've had with him, or that I've even read of him, he's always kind of talking about, I want something in the future. I want the big fights. My hope is that he's able to see what's right in front of him, which is Ty Barnett, who's you know, I don't think everybody's thinking he's going to clean up the division or anything, but he's the kind of guy, if you're looking past him, you might get hit with something big that changes everything for you. So, you know, I'm hoping for the best for Mercito, that he doesn't suffer that kind of loss, and that we actually get a good fight.
You know, we haven't had a chance really quick, you know, because we've been so crazy here. We did have like a format of what we were going to do, but everything just got really thrown off with everything shutting down, and we were just struggling to get the show going. We hope everybody enjoyed it. But Josh McDaniel is a Leaving the Ring writer, is a fantastic young driving writer. This kid, you know, he's making it happen, he's living the dream, and I always want to get his opinion. I enjoy his opinion, I enjoy his articles, so I want to find out a little bit of what his thoughts on it. He hosts the Box, and that's every Sunday night at 5 p.m. Pacific time and 8 o'clock Eastern time, along with Noche de Boxeo on Monday nights. But let's hear what Josh McDaniel's got to say, one of the hosts of the Boxing Fix, about Marcito in the upcoming fight.
And, you know, I'm always curious to see him fight, man, because, you know, we've seen very little of him in recently. You know, it's few and far between of his fights. So I just want to see how he comes out. I want to see him start finishing more of his opponents, you know, and look good doing it, you know. Sometimes he fights these guys. I think it was his last fight. It was the top on that. I think it was the undercard of, I can't remember what card it was, but he didn't look too great. You know, a lot of people weren't up on him. A lot of people kind of drowning him, you know. So I like to see him come out and look strong and finish his opponent and just look very good doing it.
I think that's the hope for him, you know, is that he does have an explosive performance and that he leaves everybody wanting more.
Right.
Because, you know, he's gone 28 rounds his last three fights. You know, he did get a TKO win in his last one, but the other two, they went the distance. And that's not really what you want when you're – I mean, I think
longer fights do teach you something, and you do need those rounds. You do need those developmental fights. But there comes a tipping point where it's like, all right, now show me what you've learned instead of extending all the time. And I think that's exactly what this fight needs to be.
Yeah, and that's the thing is sometimes, you know, like you said, the more rounds you're getting, more rounds, and you know, you're learning in there. That's great. But like you said, it's like sometimes if you're fighting a guy who's been knocked out three of his last four fights or whatever, you need to be the one to finish him four of the last five fights. You know, you need to be that guy. You can't just let it go and say, oh, I'm going to take it easy, because sometimes even getting rounds, and you might not be learning, but you might just be taking it easy and being, you know, taking lack on him.
Yeah, that's the thing. You don't want to kind of go stale waiting for something to happen or trying to make something happen. Moving on to, because we're running out of time, August 4th, Saturday, 2012, at the Texas Station Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. Antila Fatura, Diego Magdaleno, 22-0 versus Antonio Davis, 29-7. In support there, Jose Benavides, 15-0 versus Raul Tovar, 10-5-1. And Mike Lee kind of rounds out the trio versus the dreaded Tom Bob Anderson. Steve calls him, which is TVA, which I think is just hilarious. You know, fast fact about Diego and
I know they call it
that butt ass.
The guy had me knocked out later. Fast fact about Diego Magdaleno, and I think only I would probably ask this question, but I was like, what's up with the glamorous? You know, he kind of wears the Camachos. And what he said is it's not really a fashion choice so much as his style. He has kind of a wider stance and he moves a lot. It's very comfortable for him. So there you go. That's why he wears those shorts. I still don't know why Fernando Montiel wears John Stockton's shorts, but that's a whole other story.
Yeah, it's not even that pleasant to watch, too. You know, you're kind of afraid that if he moves the wrong way, something might come out. That's not what I want to see when I'm watching a boxing match, you know?
No. I think he's going to take out Antonio Davis. I mean, this guy, I think he's 39 years old. You know, he is who he is. This is kind of, let's fulfill the contract fight and get these guys some work. That's kind of what this whole show is. Benavides.
It's a keep busy fight. Let's be honest. That's what it is, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. There's nothing wrong with that. We need those. At the Exposition Hall in Mobile, Alabama, Fox Sports, Deontay, could he be Wilder, 23-0, versus Curtis Manswell, one of my favorite names, Curtis Manswell, 22-5. Wilder, can you train a chin to be better?
No, you definitely can, but you can train a chin to avoid punches. That's something that he's got to work on. I mean, his style matches his last name. He does get a little too wilder in that ring. He's got to understand. I mean, I don't get why some of these trainers don't focus on you. You obviously, you see guys that want to capitalize on their strength, which is great, but you got to make time for that weakness. And to me, you should invest more time on the weaknesses than on the strengths.
Yeah, without question. I mean, that's why we're going to do a bunch of shots later, because that is my weakness, and I'm going to spend some time on it. Let us move on to at Centro de – we're running out of time. Convenciones in Mazatlan, Mexico. Wow, I butchered that. John Real Casimero, 16-0, versus Pedro Guevara, 18-0-1. And at the Cobb Galleria Center in Atlanta, Georgia, Grady Brewer, 29-14, versus Yorbis Barthelemy, 25-9-2. I know we've all been waiting for that one.
Right.
And at the Coliseo, Ruben Rodriguez and Bayomon Rico, Joe Arroyo versus Miguel Tamayo, 12-3-2. And that is your weekend fight schedule.
There you go. Here on Leaving the Ring Radio, our first U stream live. We're going to be going all over the place, and hopefully in California, if we can make it in other states like New York to Texas, Las Vegas, we're going to definitely try. This was our first one, so we had some bumps and bruises and scraped some knees and, you know, definitely bumped heads here on the show, but we got it done. We got 3 hours up and stuff, so we appreciate everybody that was patient. And obviously, you know, has been with us through the thick and thin, you know. And like I said, this is our way of giving back to the boxing community and support these trainers that, you know, at the same time, you know, like, you know, a funny thing, and we only got a few minutes, but a lot of people think that trainers make a lot of money. They don't. They make very, very little. You know, they have to wait for the to give them a paycheck. There's no negotiations with that promoter. That has nothing
to do with them. So why not try to help them keep these lights on, try to keep these faculties clean and make sure they're functional for these youngsters to come in here and learn this craft. The craft that we love, the thing that we pay to come and see, you know. So it's our way for Leaving the Ring to show back the boxing community that not only do we talk about it, we do love the kids that get involved and the gyms that produce these kids for us. And we're going to right now give a shout out to our sponsors that helped us develop the show.
Yeah, and once again, I just want to give a nice thank you to El Pescador Mexican Restaurant in Fillmore, California. Some of the finest food, Mexican food I've had this side of Koreatown. Extreme Boxing School, Santa Paula, California. And the Glen Tavern Inn in Santa Paula, California as well. I can't wait to sleep there. Dave, as always. Actually, not as always. This is really weird sitting next to you through the whole show. The sights, the sounds, the smells of Ustream. But it's been fun. It's been an adventure, as always.
What people don't even know is that Gabriel keeps reaching underneath the table, and I'm fighting him off. But here's Josh.
You know, I couldn't go without saying this, just for Gabriel. You know, at midnight, we are taking shots because that's when Floyd Mayweather would be released, and Gabriel would be celebrating with excitement and joy. So, Gabriel and TMT Promotions and everything, we're taking shots tonight for that.
Well, there you go. 3 hours of boxing talk here on Leaving the Ring. I'm your host, David Duenas, with my co-host, Mr. Gabriel Montoya, the Dark Cloud, and the young Josh McDaniel, the guy that wears the mini skirt and the pom-poms for Floyd Mayweather. There he is right there. And here at the Extreme Boxing, again, just really quick before we go off the air, Extreme Boxing School's first annual fundraiser. It's going to be August 4th. 6 p.m. is when the doors are going to open. They're going to have food, music, and children's play area. Everyone should be in attendance. Come out here and support these young guys, support the gym. It's at Faulkner Road, which is 957 Faulkner Road, Unit 211. I know some people are going to hit me up on Twitter about that one, but don't worry about it. It's behind Kmart in Santa Paula, California, 93060. You want to call 805-279-0740 or call 805-223-9642 if you need directions. If I speak too fast for you, too bad, just go back into the archives and you can re-listen to the show again. Again, too, if you want to support this gym we're at right now, you certainly can. We're going to set it up on the Leaving the Ring Gmail account, and we're going to be posting it when we get back in town on the Leaving the Ring radio site so that you can send a dollar, 10 bucks. Hey, if you're rich and you got money to blow, 500 bucks. Send them on down. Let's make sure we keep these gyms open and operating. Anyways, I'm your host, Dave Duenas, Gabriel Montoya, Josh McDaniel. Don't drink and drive. Be safe out there over the weekend.
Peace.